desert and the great American Southwest. How did you all? Good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you may be in all the world time zones from the high desert in Pahrump, Nevada. I'm Art Bell, and this is the weekend edition of Coast to Coast AM. Glad, very happy to be here, and again, really, really pleased to have WABC in New York on board. You remember I mentioned the phrase mysterious and reassuring? I love that phrase, mysterious and reassuring. Well, that was a phrase picked or plucked by me from the Showtime show that I'm so in love with called Dead Like Me, which applies more ways than one here. In that program, George, who was killed, George was killed by a toilet seat. A Russian re-entering toilet seat nailed George, and she became dead. And then her job was to retrieve souls just before they would die violently. You know, before somebody was going to, well, assume room temperature, as Rush would say, in some violent way. She would take their souls, and that was her job. She was called a Reaper, and it's kind of a comedy drama. And it's serious, and it's funny, and it's really cool. And she was assigned to make this notebook for, yeah, even the dead have to have a job. And she worked for some company called Happy Times. And she was supposed to make a some sort of, I don't know, what would you call it? What did they call it? It just flew right out of my mind. A scrapbook. And her scrapbook consisted of the work she does, which means that, you know, the people... Thank you. You were about to say scrapbook, right? Thank you. Anyway, you know, the work she does, which is to take people, and she would take a picture of them while they were still happy in life, and then, you know, the other pictures were after it happened, and usually they were in pieces. And she made a scrapbook, you know, and wasn't a big hit, but... She described it this way, and she would show the pictures of the people in life happily marching through life, and that was the reassuring part of the story. And then she flipped the page, and boom, here are all these dead people. And she said, this is the mysterious part. You know, everything is going along just fine, and then boom, they pull the rug right out from under you. That's reminded me of last night's program. Everything is just, you know, going along just fine. Everything is just great. And then, boom, they pull the rug right out from under you, and you're in the Federation and the wars and stuff. And that was pretty wild. Now, for tonight, we're going to be very busy, so we're going to have to get underway very quickly here. Just one more item, though. The webcam. Last night, I showed you a photograph from the air. That was me hanging out of a helicopter, actually hanging out of a helicopter, taking those photographs. The guy who flew the helicopter said, you sure you want to do that? I said, yeah, I'm sure. When are you ever going to get the chance again? So I hung out of the helicopter, took pictures of my house, and last night I gave you one of the back of the house. This is tonight's picture on the webcam. Go to coastcoastam.com, webcam, upper left-hand corner. You will see a picture of the front of my house. Now, it used to be a clean picture, but one of you out there, one of you people with too much time on your hands and lots of talent with Photoshop has modified the photograph a little bit. And so I thought I would put up the slightly modified picture of the front of my house, taken from the air. And there it is. So you can go take a look at that if you want to. Serious and reassuring. In a moment, we're going to talk to a man named Harry Helms. Harry is an amateur radio operator, W7HLH. I'll tell you more about him in a moment. But he's going to tell us about secret stuff, clandestine radio, pirate radio stations, things like... Oh, and by the way, well, next hour coming is Major Ed Dames. I'm going to give you a little clue about what he's going to talk about. And so you might not want to tune into this show. Certainly you don't want your children around. Standard warning. But listen to this. A few of the things the Matrix Intelligence Agency is presently working on. One... An extraterrestrial agency has been collecting a key bunch of data material from Earth for at least 1,000 years, thousands of years now. A specialized team will attempt to interdict this logistics supply route at its primary collection point. Goal, induce contact. Two, the People's Republic of China's most secret weapons program. An update from Ed on the planned use of a nuclear weapon by the DPRK, Korea. And how about this? Kill shot, shots, plural. Our star, the sun, will soon go on a rampage and begin to affect, in other words, terminate Earth's living system dynamics. Please cancel any long-term plans for your future. And five, a note about World War III. So as you can see, this is going to be pretty dark stuff in the next hour, as is usually the case with His Majesty Dr. Doom. So be warned, forewarned ahead of time. This is something you're not going to want your children to hear, nor may you even wish to hear it if you get scared easily. So that's a little warning issued ahead of time. In a moment, Harry Helms. Harry Helms is the author of over a dozen books, mostly scientific and technical ones. His books include Computer Language Reference Guide, Electronic Circuits Cookbook, All About Ham Radio, Shortwave Listening Guidebook, and his latest, Inside, oh, you're going to love this, Inside the Shadow Government. A former editor for such publishers as McGraw-Hill, big time, and Academic Press, he was co-founder of LLH Technology Publishing, now a full-time writer and publisher consultant. He has written about ham, shortwave, and pirate radio for magazines like Popular Communications and Monitoring Times. He's an active ham operator, W7HLH. Harry lives in Las Vegas, and here he is. Hey, Harry.
Good evening, Art.
Good evening, Harry. Hey, I'm gonna do a switcheroo on you here, and we're gonna talk about radio and pirate stuff in a minute. I wanna talk about your new book, Inside the Shadow Government. And we're gonna have to be quick about this, but lay it on me. I usually stay away from this kind of thing, but what the hell? Is the shadow government real?
Yes, indeed, Art. And it is the standby plans that our government has in case of a catastrophic attack on the United States that would, in effect, decapitate our national leadership.
All right, yeah, but some people call this the shadow government, and they have it's a far darker connotation. It's not an emergency government in case we get blasted to hell and Washington's gone or something, but it's a darker thing that's running the real elected government that we see now. Is that what it is or not?
That's not how I use the term. However, the shadow government, as I say in the book, is the sort of thing that the extent of it and the powers that are available to it, I don't even think the president himself understands the full extent of what people say, such as FEMA, are up to.
Uh-huh. What are they up to?
Well, for example, they have, believe it or not, real plans for relocation of people in the event of a presidential national emergency, seizing your bank account, seizing your car, or telling you that you get to relocate to a certain part of the country and work at a specified job, whether you like it or not.
Why would they want my, well, I don't know, we can only handle these one at a time. Why would they want my bank account?
It's part of controlling the economy in the event of a national emergency. These plans have come about ever since the early days of the Cold War in response to a Soviet attack. And like many government programs, they kept growing and growing to the point that it's large and somewhat out of control now.
All right, so this plan is in place, and in your opinion, it's what? It's anti-American, it's wrong. I mean, what would you shouldn't our government have something in place in case of the worst?
Yes, they should, but it should be done in accordance with established constitutional law and procedures.
But if we had a nuclear attack, Harry, isn't the Constitution temporarily out the window?
The plans that could be made to accommodate it could be made in accordance with the Constitution. And the problem is that some of these powers could be activated for some very dubious national emergencies. Mm. For example, you might remember President Nixon imposed wage and price controls in the 70s.
Yes.
And declared a national emergency. The problem is that it is the president who decides what is and what is not a national emergency.
Mm-hmm.
So the president could, by signing the appropriate executive order, in effect rule like a czar for, say, a period of up to 6 months before Congress could overrule him.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that this power, well, you have no way of knowing, of course, whether it will be used inappropriately, but that's obviously your concern.
that's the real concern, Art. We certainly do need some sort of standby emergency powers for the president in the event of a catastrophic event. Say, like if the September 11th attacks had been directed against the White House and the Capitol instead of the World Trade Center.
Some evidence, actually, they were. In the
certainly, yes. Flight 93 seems to have been heading toward either the White House or the Capitol.
Now, do they have vast underground control centers for all of this?
You have probably heard of Mount Weather, which is in the western Virginia in the Blue Ridge Mountains.
Indeed.
When in the wake of the September 11th attacks, that's where Vice President Dick Cheney was taken for several days after those attacks.
Right.
And inside Mount Weather is, in effect, a parallel version of the civilian United States government.
Yeah, everybody wondered where Dick Cheney had gone to, and you're telling me he was at Mount Weather.
Yes, indeed. And it's interesting that ties into some of our other topics tonight, because there's actually a radio station at Mount Weather, which is operated by FEMA, which people can actually hear on the shortwave band.
Oh, no kidding.
Yes, indeed.
Now, you and I are hams, so we know all about that in shortwave, but a lot of listeners don't. And listen, folks, a lot of you can go acquire one place or another a shortwave radio, and it will open up a whole new world to you. I mean, just the shortwave portion of shortwave alone is like 30 times the size of the AM broadcast band. About 30 times as big, and so contained in there is this wonderful world of incredible stuff that you monitor, right, Harry?
Yes, indeed. I like to see looking at the sky with your naked eye and looking at it through a telescope. Well, listening to radio when it's conventional AM and FM and listening to it when it's on shortwave is that same level of increased things to hear, see, experience. There's so much out there that most people are totally unaware of.
Well, all right, let's begin with Mount Weather. I would love to hear Mount Weather on shortwave. Where would I be listening if I wanted to?
Well, this is, again, a bit of a talk that hams understand. Transmissions are in upper sideband,
okay,
or USB.
Right.
During the daytime, it operates on 10493 kilohertz.
10493, no kidding. 10,
and at night, 5211 kilohertz. And the call sign they use is WGY912.
WGY.
912.
912. And that's Mount
Weather. At Mount Weather, yes, sir.
No kidding. And is that, those two frequencies, are those, is that a kind of a just a system check transmission or what?
That is the main FEMA National Emergency Frequency.
I've got that, but I mean, are they coming up and transmitting as sort of a daily test, or what's the deal?
They test about once a week, and also whenever there is a national emergency or a pending national emergency, those are the two frequencies you want to check. They were quite humming in the first few days after September 11th, 2001.
Oh, were they?
Yes, indeed.
Did you monitor any of the traffic?
The traffic was primarily encoded, but some of the call signs I copied of the stations included, and these were all tactical call signs. One was Lion's Den. Another one was called American Girl.
Lion's Den, American Girl?
Ajax Cleaner.
Ajax Cleaner, I don't even want to know what that one was.
And Alert Lab.
Alert Labs, wow. And so, you see, folks, you don't need a special license nor anything else to listen to what Harry's talking to you about. This is hot stuff, and it's going on daily, and he monitored during 9/11. This kind of stuff is wild, and so that is Mount Weather. I'll be damned. I'll be listening. Okay.
And the main FEMA station, FEMA headquarters, is WGY903.
Really?
That's the main FEMA headquarters station. And whenever there's not only an actual or potential terrorist incident, hurricanes, natural disasters like floods,
right,
those are two frequencies that I think are worth monitoring.
I should say so. Yes, indeed, and I will be monitoring. Oh, that's really slick stuff. Well, you know, you're in Las Vegas, and I'm out here in Pahrump. And out here in Pahrump, we're not very far away. In fact, from a VHF-UHF point of view, we have a clear shot between here and Mercury and the test site.
Mm-hmm.
And Area 51 and all of that. And you ought to hear some of the traffic on UHF and VHF out here.
Yes, indeed. It's very fascinating. The whole Nellis Range here in central Nevada is a cornucopia of listening experiences.
Uh-huh. Have you dabbled with attempting to intercept any traffic out to the test site in Area 51?
Unfortunately, they are going toward more and more coded traffic. So it's very difficult to tell what is being said, even when you intercept a transmission.
All righty. That's a worthwhile topic in itself. Not just those folks, but police departments, the FBI, the different lettered agencies, they're all moving now into this encoded type of radio traffic that people like Harry, who they really don't want listening, can no longer listen to because it's now scrambled. And so there's no way to get it. Right, Harry?
No way that we can decode it. However, there's still a lot of interesting things in the clear. For example, the CIA still and the Cuban Intelligence Service still transmit a lot of messages, which, while they're in code, you can receive on a conventional shortwave receiver, as does Israel's Mossad Intelligence Service.
Why would they transmit in the clear? I mean, the CIA, of all people, why would they be in the clear?
It's because the messages are sent in groups of numbers of four or five digit blocks. So that even though you can copy them down, the meaning of the message, unless you have the appropriate decoding key, does you no good.
Okie dokie. Now we're talking number stations, I guess. So, I've run into them myself quite a number of times over the years, and you'll be tuning around in the shortwave bands, and all of a sudden you'll come upon a very clear voice. Typically, I've heard a woman's voice more than anything else, and she'll be doing something like this. 5834769184 7 3. And that's all she's doing, reading endlessly these numbers, five groups of numbers, right?
And it's used, the messages are generated by the same machines used by the telephone company to tell you that you've reached an incorrect or discontinued number. If you listen, the same inflection is on each digit. As a general rule, if a station is transmitting numbers, typically in Spanish that we hear in North America, mm-hmm. if they're in groups of five, they're coming from Cuba. If they're in groups of four,
really?
They're coming from the CIA.
Really?
Yes, we know they are being transmitted from the CIA's location, transmitting facilities, near Warrenton, Virginia.
No kidding. Now, how do you know that?
They have been traced by listeners using portable shortwave receivers near these sites. And as you might imagine, they'll drop the antenna down so that it's as minimally sensitive as possible, and the receiver will still overload near these transmitter sites.
That's true.
And that's how they are able to detect them.
Huh. So what is your best speculation, Harry? Is this the CIA talking to its operatives around the world, its undercover people?
That appears to be the case. There have been cases where agents have been busted particularly in Central America, and they have found a shortwave receiver along with these messages in blocks of four that have been copied. They use a method known as the one-time pad system.
The one-time what?
One-time pad.
Oh, pad system, all right.
Yep.
Which means what?
The agent copies down the blocks of numbers.
Right.
They turn to the appropriate page in their book, their pad book. They will either add or subtract another corresponding group of numbers to the received message. Then the resulting groups are matched up against the master code list. Now, it's a cumbersome method, but unless you have appropriate copies of the matching pad,
you're never going to decipher.
You're right. It's almost unbreakable.
And these signals, because they're transmitted on shortwave rather than some other manner, go around the world, courtesy of the ionosphere, bouncing up to the ionosphere, back to Earth, up to the ionosphere, back to Earth, and in such a way it can go all the way around the world, right?
They can be heard throughout the world, particularly at night. If someone will tune outside the amateur radio, ham radio bands, and the international shortwave broadcasting bands at night, tune carefully, and you'll hear several number stations without really trying.
Really? They are that numerous?
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. particularly the five-digit variety coming from Cuba. Most of them will be in Spanish, perhaps 80% or more, with the remainder primarily heard in English.
All right, Harry, hold tough. We're at the bottom of the hour here, and I would imagine that people in Washington, CIA, are rapidly writing down these numbers and trying to crack their code. I bet. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM. Coming to you in the dark, as always, from the high desert. It's going to be quite a night. I suggest you keep it planted right where you've got it.
Find out more about tonight's guest. Log on to coasttocoastam.com. Kingdom of Nye, from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. And the wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
Mysterious and reassuring indeed. Harry Helms is my guest, and sometimes the U.S. government transmits strange signals on the broadcast band. That's right, the regular AM broadcast band. Maybe you actually have heard something like is going to be described in a moment, so stay right where you are. A number of months ago, the rumors were wild, absolutely wild for those who listened to the AM broadcast band. There was some strange, unidentified signal just above 11 on the dial, 1130, 1140, I can't remember, just above 11 on the AM dial. There was this weird signal that people were hearing. You know something about that, Harry?
Well, Art, that was one of the more interesting experiences that I had lately. In February of 2001, at night, listeners throughout the country were hearing what sounded like a high-pitched whistle or pulsing sound near 1140 on the AM dial.
Yes.
Speculation had it that perhaps this was a Cuban jammer, because there's a Spanish-language station in Miami on 1140 that Castro doesn't like. But why was it stronger west of the Mississippi than east of the Mississippi?
Right. No, that wouldn't make sense.
I use some very advanced listening equipment, and I was able to discover the signal was actually on 1136 in between the channels on the AM band.
That might account for the whistling.
That's right, because the signals were beating against that on 1140. What was even weirder was when I started listening closely to this and found out it was relaying stations in Nevada and Southern California.
What?
Yes.
What do you mean relaying?
Doing an actual off-the-air relay without the permission or knowledge of the station being relayed.
Well, now, why would they do that?
That was something I endeavored to find out. I contacted and spoke to some of the chief engineers of some of the stations involved, and they said that they had complained to the FCC about this.
No kidding.
And had gotten zero in the way of results or satisfaction.
So you believe that this was not Cuban, obviously. You believe this was in the United States. Do you think it was being done by an arm of one of our governments?
Well, here's how it gets even better, Art. You're probably familiar with the principle of the directional AM loop antenna, which lets you reject stations from certain directions and get some rough direction finding on the
direction find or pick up stations you want to pick up while rejecting the others, or pick up the rejected. And yes,
The signal was coming from apparently a location right in the middle of the Nevada test site.
Test site. Well, now, why would the test site, as much as they have to do up there with whatever they do, why would they do something like that?
That's a very good question. Now, The other part of it is, what did the FCC know and didn't tell these engineers? It so happened toward the end of February 2001, the engineers of several stations on 1140 agreed that at midnight they were going to shut down their transmitters for a few seconds so a very accurate location could be determined for the signal.
No kidding. I had no idea that occurred. So they got agreement from all the stations on that frequency?
In Southern California and in Nevada.
And they did that?
But the signal disappeared a couple of minutes before the stations were supposed to leave the air.
Oh, there must have been a leak, Harry.
What was better, I called the FCC's Enforcement Bureau in Washington and asked them, what was the signal about? They claimed they knew nothing about it.
Well, naturally not.
Then I called the regional enforcement offices in California and in the ones in Nevada. They also knew nothing about it. Then, a couple of days later, on a day when I was out, there was a message left for me by someone from the FCC who did not leave his name, saying, "We busted a pirate radio station in the Las Vegas area."
In the Las Vegas area.
But one of the chief engineers of
You know what, Harry? I don't know if I buy that. A pirate to create that strong a signal.
There's no way, Art. No way.
I don't buy that one either. A pirate, you know, he's barely going to have an antenna up, and he's going to affect people in his neighborhood, maybe even within the city limits, sort of, maybe. But to have something of that magnitude, no way.
One of the engineers relayed eventually told me that the FCC said, "We're aware of the signal. Don't worry about it."
Oh.
And the other one, who knows some people who work up at the Nevada test site, said it's actually some project they're working on out at S4.
S4?
Yes.
Oh, it must be fun to be in the government way up where you can just sort of, you know, there are no rules really except the ones that you make, I guess.
I suppose so, but in this case, yes, they were doing that, and my pet theory was perhaps they were testing some sort of military-related portable transmitting station for use in psychological warfare operations.
Maybe.
That transmitter may be in the Middle East right now.
Good point. This is something that all of you could have participated in. It was going on right in the middle of the AM broadcast band, folks, so anybody could have been. Maybe you heard it. People do hear strange things from time to time, but not nearly so strange as if you go to shortwave. Now, on shortwave, we have pirate stations, don't we, Harry?
Pirate stations are people who want to broadcast on shortwave but decide that they really don't need a license.
Yeah.
They typically use old and modified ham radio gear.
Uh-huh.
They tend to be younger enthusiasts. They gather on a certain set of frequencies, and they're very active on weekend nights and on holidays. For example, Halloween is traditionally the biggest night of the year for pirate radio broadcasting.
Is it really?
Yes, indeed.
They should be listening to Ghost to Ghost right here instead of doing that. But instead, they're transmitting illicit signals about where, so people can listen if they want to.
The most common frequency is 6955 kilohertz.
6955, and then I would assume up and down a little bit from that, they probably
stack
up.
Right, about 10 kilohertz high or low, with 6925 1.25, the second most popular frequency, and most of them are in sideband, either upper or lower sideband.
And what sort of broadcasting are they doing?
Well, one station currently active is called Shadow Radio. And its programming consists entirely of old radio dramas, principally the Shadow program from the 30s and 40s.
No kidding.
Another one is Voice of the Tiki, which features nothing but Polynesian music, the kind that you hear in Polynesian restaurants and fake luau's. One is Lounge Lizard Radio, maybe the only station left in North America programming Louis Prima.
All of these wannabe broadcasters, well, I guess I shouldn't say wannabe, they're doing it, are potential targets for the Federal Communications Commission, who really doesn't like that kind of thing, right?
Yes, indeed. They are running a major risk. I mean, I think the current thing is 10 years imprisonment, possibly $10,000 fine. Although most cases, the FCC simply confiscates their gear and levels a fine of, say, $2,000 or $3,000. The thing with the FCC is that a lot of these pirates operate sporadically, so that by the time the FCC has found a location for them,
they're gone.
They're gone.
And this goes on virtually every night? I mean, something can be heard almost every night, or what?
Primarily on weekends, say from Friday and Saturday nights, especially after midnight in the east.
Weekend warriors, huh?
Yes. But there are also some pirates on the AM band in larger metropolitan areas.
Oh, really?
Usually at the new expanded end of the broadcast band from 1610 up to 1700.
A lot of people don't even know the AM band expanded. You know, the newer radios have it, of course, but the AM band used to end at 1600. Now it goes all the way up to what,
1700 even.
1700. So there's a whole new part of the AM band, and you're telling me there are pirates that are jumping in that part of the band?
Particularly in Boston and South Florida. Many
really?
Of these pirates are almost community stations serving new immigrant groups.
How do you recognize, how would a listener out there recognize the fact that it's a pirate, not a just another station?
For one thing, the technical quality usually will not be as good. You will often not hear any commercials. You will never hear call letters used or anything that a conventional broadcaster will use. For example, we have one pirate right now on 1650 here in Las Vegas.
You do?
Yes, indeed, which does not use call letters, does primarily dance music, disco music, but it operates 24-7, and here on the northwestern side of Las Vegas has a very good signal that can be heard quite well.
Nationwide, how many of these illicit stations do you think are on the air, Harry?
At any given time on the AM band, for example, I would say there must be dozens. It's hard to keep track because they come and go, and there's no central registry or database for these stations. On shortwave, typically maybe a dozen to 18 pirates will be active on the given weekend.
Have you ever... I know you can see your ham operator here. Earlier in your radio career, Harry, we all have some less than white blotches early in our life. Did you ever venture into the world of... maybe I shouldn't ask this, should I?
What?
I'm not going to ask that at all.
I take the Fifth Amendment.
Yeah, okay, that's good. All right, so people can listen for this sort of thing. How much of a setup, you know, this is a frequent question I get, to listen to the kind of stuff that we've been talking about, whether it's the CIA or the Cubans or the weird signals that are broadcast, how much equipment does somebody have to have?
Actually, very simple portable shortwave receivers, the kind that's available for many outlets for maybe $200 or less, will do fine.
Really?
The advances in electronics today have meant that today for $200 you can get performance equivalent to something that would cost you several hundreds or even thousands of dollars only a few years ago.
How much of an antenna attached to it for, to be effective?
That's the key, I think. Just a simple length of insulated wire, maybe clipped to the antenna, the telescoping antenna that comes with it, and outside of a window or such, will be enough to provide more than adequate signals for many of these stations, particularly those in North America.
And boom, the world opens up. Now, in Central America, Harry, there are another variety of sort of pirate stations. I mean, these are anti-government stations and stuff like that that get set up in the jungle by groups down there, right?
Yes, indeed. They're called clandestine stations.
Right.
They differ from pirates in that a clandestine station is trying to bring about some sort of political change or incite revolution. One that's being heard right now that's attracting a lot of attention is one called Radio Free Cascadia.
Cascadia?
Yes, and it is an anti-Mexican government station that is either transmitting from within Mexico or near Mexico in the United States.
Well,
that one is in both English and Spanish on 15045 and is heard in the early evening.
15045?
Yes, sir.
My guess would be that if somebody from the Mexican government were to come upon these broadcasters, it would be worse than a $3,000 fine.
They would probably disappear.
As in?
Disappear.
As in a candidate for George Grab the Soul.
You have that, yes.
Liquidation. So a lot of these broadcasters and a lot of these broadcasts that you hear are being done at the risk of the life of those doing it, clearly, right?
Yes, indeed. Particularly in Central and South America, there have been cases, for example, where some listeners to shortwave stations have actually heard them being taken off the air with automatic gunfire in the background.
Oh, really?
Yes, indeed.
That would be a dramatic little piece of... by the way, what's the law on taping? I was going to say a dramatic little piece of tape. Can you tape for your own edification things that you hear like this, secret things and stuff?
Yes, you can. And in fact, there is no restrictions whatsoever on listening, recording, transcribing, or otherwise making use of these transmissions.
Now, there was legislation passed that makes it illegal to listen to cell phone conversations, for example, so you can't listen to anything. You can't listen to cell phones legally, right?
That's correct, but that legislation did not cover these shortwave broadcasts, particularly those from stations that are unlicensed, illegal, or otherwise fail to properly identify themselves.
But if you listen during an emergency, I don't know, like 911, say, and you hear something, I don't know, earth-shaking that would be newsworthy, for example, and you turn around and turn over that tape of the broadcast to the commercial media, somebody like me, have you committed a crime?
Technically, yes, but there is an exemption in these various laws that say that if you are passing on information relating to a legitimate emergency, there is a good faith exemption there. And to be honest, I don't know of any successful prosecution that has been made for eavesdropping or intercepting communications under these various laws. There have been some civil suits, but I'm unaware of any criminal prosecution that has been successfully launched.
Other than the clandestine radio stations, whose motive for operation would be clear, why do you think that pirate broadcasters do what they do?
I think it's going back again to our youth in ham radio, just the sheer joy of getting on the radio,
yes,
having your voice heard hundreds or thousands of miles away. It's a very intoxicating thing for
it's
a teenager to actually with radio.
It's magic.
Yes.
And I guess maybe that could that be why the Federal Communications Commission, when they stumble on a youngster who's just sort of off on the trip you just described, they don't really get them too hard.
For most youngsters, particularly the ones under, say, 18, it's a warning. Usually saying stop it, and then if it persists, is when they bring in the heavy guns.
Heavy guns?
Yes, the fines and seizing of the equipment and such.
I see. But there's somewhat understanding of the youngster who is intrigued with the magic of radio and that sort of thing.
Well, of course, because many of the FCC employees felt that same magic in their youth.
Good answer. All right. I've got a million fast blasts wanting the frequencies of Mount Weather again and about what times, the appropriate times to listen. They're really interested in that, obviously. So lay it out one more time.
Okay. During the daytime, and this is daytime on the East Coast, They operate on 10493 kilohertz.
Right.
At night, and again, this is night on the East Coast, 5211 kilohertz, both times in both frequencies in upper sideband. They run drills at irregular times, but usually once a week. But if there is a significant natural disaster or a terrorist strike, those are the two frequencies come to life almost 24 hours a day.
Yes. Did you hear what you would describe as, even though you might not be able to understand a transmission, you can understand perhaps if it sounds frantic or it sounds dramatic in or different in some way than a normal test?
In the days following the September 11th attacks, there was quite a bit of traffic, and you could tell some stress in some of the voices. However, I was impressed by the remarkable professionalism and calm exhibited during that time.
Well, you know, almost every warning we've had of terrorist activity in the country has sort of been followed with an explanation that, look, we've been monitoring the terrorists and the chatter. The telephone or secret chatter is really at a high level. You think they monitor, just like we're talking about monitoring, they monitor the terrorists in the same exact way?
I think they probably monitor the networks the same way, the number stations in the same way. So even if they cannot understand the content of the transmissions, the quantity of the transmissions, the length of the transmissions, whether or not certain transmissions are repeated,
all
those could yield valuable clues.
You betcha. Harry, what a pleasure it has been. We're going to have you on and do an entire program on this topic. I just wanted to get their lips wet out there. So thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. It's been great.
Good night, buddy.
Take care.
All right. Warning. Major Ed Dames, Dr. Doom is coming up next. And the topics are going to be heavy, so you're going to want to position yourself appropriately or maybe even turn off the radio altogether. But it is pretty dark, heavy stuff that comes from Dr. Doom. So get thyself prepared. This is Coast to Coast AM.
Covered and then to burst up through tarmac to the sun again, or to fly to the sun without burning a wing, to lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing, to have all these things in our memories hoard, and to use them to help us to
take a ride? Call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to call Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
Final warning before the event here, folks. Major Ed Dames is coming on. They call him Dr. Doom, and it's for a good reason. And it's because a lot of what you're going to hear is very scary stuff. Now, you can get angry and say it's all a bunch of pooey and turn it off, or you can get scared and turn it off. Either way, if it's going to affect you or the children, do turn it off. Don't put yourself through that pain. However, if you're curious, and I certainly am, we all know what that did to the cat, right? But I am. Then you listen to this. because I believe remote viewing is the real McCoy. I've had the opportunity to go through Major Dame's military record, word for word. He did exactly for the military and the CIA what he said he did. It's all there in his record. I know that to be true. So that warning made, I just want to say one more thing before we leave the subject of radio altogether. Again, the webcam photograph tonight. If you go to the Coast to Coast AM website and click on webcam, upper left-hand corner, you'll see a photograph of my house retouched by one of my listeners, I thought, in a very cute way. That's why I put it up there. Those white poles that you see are about a third higher now than when this picture was taken from the helicopter that I was hanging out of. About a third higher, and so that gives you some idea of what I've gone through here to be able to receive just about anything in the world, and I can assure you I am able to do that. It's absolutely incredible. That's what those white poles are that you see in that photograph. Just wanted to let you know. Coming up in a moment, Major Ed Dames. He is clearly my most liked and hated guest at the same time. The world's foremost remote viewing teacher, Edward A. Dames, Major U.S. Army retired, is a decorated military intelligence officer and an original member of the U.S. Army Prototype Remote Viewing Training Program. That's the one that was finally blown open by Nightline one night, and they had a bunch of people from it saying it had been 20 years in the doing in the CIA. Anyway, he served as the training and operations officer for the Defense Intelligence Agency Psychic Intelligence, or PSIINT. That would be PSI Intelligence Collection Unit. And currently serves, by the way, as executive director for the Matrix Intelligence Agency, a private consulting group. Ed is a technical consultant for the feature film Suspect Zero and, in fact, plays the role of an FBI remote viewing instructor in that movie as well. Here is, from the islands somewhere, his cave or whatever in the islands, here is Major Ed Dames. Major Dames. Ed. Oh, man. We lost him. A beautiful wind-up and introduction like that, and he's not there. Sheesh. So I'm obviously going to have to redial this number. Oh, man, he should have been there. Let's redial this and see if we get him. Remarkable. But I'm not unused to occurrences of this sort. It happens to us all the time.
I'm here.
Hey, Ed. I gave you this big wind-up introduction, and boom, nothing. You weren't even there.
Oh, you wouldn't believe what happened, but I'll tell you later.
Okay.
7 years.
7 years what?
This month. I've been doing your show for 7 years.
Wow. Yeah, that's quite a while, all right. Long enough, some would suggest, for some of what you forecast to have come true. And, you know, some of it has, and that's what people forget. I had a guy calling up last night frantically, Ed Dames is wrong. Well, you know, I get these things in email, and I get them all the time. People who just hate your guts. I mean, they just hate your guts. And they say you've never had anything right, and that is incorrect. I've documented quite a bit over, and I got this in email. Looking at the Coast to Coast website, I see a Major Dames schedule for this weekend. Please remember to tell him about the baby formula scandal I told you about a few weeks ago. To remind you, FBI investigating baby formula ring in Texas and throughout the country with ties to Middle Eastern terrorist organizations. Now, you remember the whole big thing about baby formula, Ed?
Well, what I mentioned was that as part of as training officer for the military team, and this was about 16 years ago, we were looking ahead and, at events over the horizon that had nothing to do with Department of Defense priorities. But as a training officer, I could slip Mickeys in now and then, which is good for the team because you want to work a variety of different targets to keep people on their toes so their imagination doesn't – so you don't condition yourself to think that you're dealing with yet another military target, and you think yourself into a box. So I would give them targets over the horizon. And what we were seeing were a great number of human babies dying of starvation and disease. So when I hired all of the original military team members and then later on trained civilians to be world-class remote viewers, we relooked this particular topic to see what was going on. And it looks at this juncture as if it isn't because of poison formula or milk, it is because there are no cows. Cows are diseased and dying. And that appears to be the reason why over the horizon babies have no milk, and cow's milk, that is.
Mm-hmm. Well, occasionally when you get something that appears to be a hit because it has to do with the same topic, I at least like to call attention to that fact. Over the years, there have been quite a number of them. So, you know, what I tell people is, look, I know remote viewing is real. And by the way, since we're at the beginning of the program, the obligatory, just real quick, I know there's some who don't know, what is remote viewing?
It's systematic clairvoyance, essentially systematic clairvoyance. There's three ways you can use it. You can use it to describe a distant hidden target, a person, place, thing, or an event. You can use it to solve a problem, which requires some know-how. Or you can use it in a predictive sense, as a predictive study. If you want to see what it is in its basic and very, very spectacular form, I would advise those parents who have children in the room, just before you evict your children from tonight's show, and you may want to do that,
have your kids go to their
computers and hit the website, the URL, readyourteachersmind.com or readyourparentsmind.com and see what children can do with this mind-dazzle kids kit that we developed.
Yeah, I'm sure a whole lot of parents are going to send them to a site that says readyourparentsmind.com.
It's pretty nifty. If you want to see what we debuted, this mind-dazzle kids kit in Tokyo a couple of weeks ago, it's spectacular.
Yeah.
These are elementary school kids who are against sealed envelopes and distant targets. You'll see it's up on the website.
Japanese kids just love it, huh? And they're good at it.
They're really good at it.
You know what, Ed? I would actually think I might know why that would be. The Japanese are an extremely disciplined people, mentally disciplined. Perhaps not as much in this generation as some prior, but they are, above all, mentally disciplined. And your business, a remote viewing, requires discipline of what other people might say is just psychic talent. It requires this great discipline, right?
I like to say it's mind control. That remote viewing is mind control. You control your own mind. It's an attention management skill and requires a lot of rigor. What we do, the difference, the reason that really good psychics, we can run rings around them are because a psychic doesn't have a list of protocols and standards to follow. They'll sit and ponder incoming information,
right,
and that's when they'll lose the target. But we have a step-by-step procedure that we teach. We're always moving, always collecting the next bit of information, like playing a piano. You don't stop and ponder the note that you just played.
Uh-huh.
You play the next one. We have that, and that's part of the rigor.
And it's also designed, the discipline, that is, to keep your ego, your wild imagination out of the result.
Your imagination and your ego can't be in a remote viewing session, or you will crash and burn and completely lose the target. I have a big ego, but when I put my pen to paper, when I put my pen to paper and start remote viewing, it better be out the door. I can strap it back on again at the end of an hour session. These children's sessions, by the way, are only
really
about...
Can you really turn ego on and off like that, Ed? Can you really?
Yeah, you can, because your brain is capacity constrained. If you think of a central processing unit in your computer, it can only handle so much at one time. And when you're remote viewing, your attention is so highly, precisely knife-edged, focused on the target. There is no room to call in to play emotions and ego and imagination. At the end of the session, bam, peak drops out. And you can reattend to those other things. The brain can process that.
All right. Now, with regard to your percentage of hits, this is to some degree controlled by the level of remote viewing. In other words, is it not? If you have several remote viewers independently assigned the same project and they come up with the same result, numerically at some point, the same result from X number of people indicates 100% probability of this being accurate. Is that?
Yeah, correct. 100% likelihood. If two or more remote viewers, especially if you're using controls against blind targets the way I use them and my teams, then the mutually corroborating data from remote viewers produced is independent from each other. That's 100%. In other words, the narrative descriptions of a target or the sketches of a target, if they're mutually corroborating, that's 100%. We know that empirically. Are a really good example of what we can do. You know, I do a lot of missing children work, especially in Japan, and we have a fugitive and a missing child in the mainland U.S. too. I say mainland because I'm in Polynesia right now.
Right.
The head of the vice squad for the Portland Police Department.
Yes.
He did not know who or where his biological mother is, and where she is.
Yes.
And he's adopted. So what we did for Japanese TV is locate on camera this man's biological, determine that she was alive and where in the world she was, which happened to be Tokyo.
Huh.
So think of a needle in a haystack. Remote viewing techniques can locate the person in a major metropolitan city, and we did that on camera. We're doing it now for a missing child as well as a criminal.
And the fact that you did that was documented on Japanese TV.
TV Asahi, Channel 10, about 20 million to 40 million viewers.
Wow. All right. All right, let's dive into some of the material that you've sent me. I sort of read this as a tease in the first hour, but wow, some of this is pretty heavy stuff. An extraterrestrial... You know what, before I even... Just reading that sentence makes me want to ask this question. I mean, here you were in the military, and the military is going to be looking for gas canisters, terrorist activity. The CIA is going to want to know about its operatives that might be in danger. Whatever it is, all these different things the military and CIA would want to know. And here you are. You must have had some rough days with the CIA. I mean, going after targets that they wouldn't want a thing in the world to do with, like extraterrestrials or perhaps even their own secret stuff out at Area 51. God knows where you may have roamed with your remote viewers, but you started assigning these fun targets and started to get out of control. I imagine you had some tough moments, didn't you, with your CIA bosses?
Art, not all of those UFO-related targets were initiative on my part. Many times, agencies, particularly, you know, the National Reconnaissance Office, the UFOs are real.
You're telling me the NRO assigned you tasks in that area?
The way they did it was to hand off enigmatic photographic evidence to scientists. One of them was Dr. Hal Puthoff. I would meet Hal Puthoff off campus.
Really?
Outside of the Pentagon. So there was a plausible denial. He would pass me these enigmatic photographs or events that happened. Not all of them were CIA. Some of them were from foreign countries where the departments of defense in those foreign countries.
You mean like UFO photographs, that kind of thing?
Yes. Uh-huh. Where the foreign country, for instance, let's say Brazil, something went down, and the Brazilian government and military had no idea what happened, they would approach the U.S. Embassy and the military attaché in Brazil and say, can you help out here? Do you know anything about that? That information would be passed through. And, you know, Brazil never knew where it went, of course. And then it would end up in my hands. And because we, in our work, can provide pieces of the puzzle, not only a piece of the puzzle, but the first piece, where there's no pieces at all. What the heck went down? What happened to this crew out in the middle of the Gulf? What happened to this person who said he was abducted? These kinds of things. And what is this glowing sphere above the submarine out here? All those things landed in my lap. And so I used them as targeting material. So some of them were actually tasked. They weren't just me.
I had no idea they were tasking you this... this exotic material to look at. I had no idea.
I have a new remote viewing colloquium. It's a series of colloquia that I'm presenting. The first one in Las Vegas on November 8th at the Imperial Palace. I'm going to go into detail on this stuff that I've never mentioned before. No commercial interruptions, nothing. Point by point, all the stuff that the military did and how it was passed to us. If you would like to come and attend that, that would be good.
Commercials are important, Ed.
I know.
But it's the only way your voice is getting out there right now.
I understand. I understand. But if you want to come to that, you can hit anybody wants to do that, they can register via my website. If you can't make it to that, you can get a tape of it by going to a website, ouraliensreal.com, and you can order the videotapes. But I would encourage you to attend, because we'll be able to interact, especially if you're an intelligence officer.
Well, maybe they tipped you over the edge, but you can't tell me that all the targeting you were doing in the military was their idea, this exotic stuff. How else did you earn the moniker Dr. Doom?
Dr. Doom moniker, that nom de guerre had nothing to do, believe it or not, with the UFO enigma problem or things like that. I was a briefing officer. One of my jobs before I stepped down to become operations and training officer of the military remote viewing team was to manage black science programs in this country.
Well?
And I would brief at the old executive office building in the White House things like very nasty biological warfare threats that were on the horizon, things that are highly classified, ways that you could die that had nothing to do with vaporization and megatonnage and throw weights. Very, very diabolical. In fact, I'm going to talk about one of those tonight
when I
talk about China's most secret weapons program.
That's
how I got that name.
So, well, there must have been something in the manner of your briefing that, as well as the material, that I don't know, gave you this name.
Yeah, there was, because some of the ways in which our opponents at that time desired to kill us were very slow and painful. And that's why I got the name, Dr. Doom.
Dr. Doom. In other words, it was your job to stand in front of a group of people in a kind of a briefing situation and lay out what they were facing? Was that it?
No. It was my job to go point to point, the vice president, the secretary of defense, the president, those people, and tell them personally.
Oh. You got to those kind of levels, Ed?
I think you have a couple of my awards there where it says that I personally changed U.S. policy. And you'll see on one of them it says that the president of the United States actually changed U.S. policy based upon one of my conclusions.
With the kind of thing that you say on this program, or sort of things you say on this program, a lot of people get angry. And I'm wondering if any of the people at the higher levels of government, when you told them, I mean, you weren't giving good news, Ed, did they ever respond with anger?
The generals did.
Yeah.
Generals predominantly, and some did, but for a reason it might be surprising to you. The reason was that when you present, based upon your intelligence work, these conclusions that a threat country has now developed something that you have to, when you're confronted with the information, there's a responsibility now that you have to defend against or help prevent that type of threat from killing your own forces.
And so their anger then was from?
Another problem.
All right. Hold tight there. My guest is Major Ed Dames, otherwise affectionately known as Dr. Doom, and he has worked on some pretty exotic things lately. You're going to be hearing about them all night long tonight. So, in the middle of the night, like a freight train moving through it, this is Coast.
Subscribe to After Dark. Call toll-free 1-888-727-5505.
Don't come easy. You don't have to shout, only
York Belt in the Kingdom of Nye. From west of the Rockies, dial 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222 or use the wildcard line at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Network.
You know, come to think of it, over the years, I've interviewed every single remote viewer out there of any note or distinction, and there is one thing that I note about all of them that I'll ask Ed about in a moment. No doubt about it. Over the years, I have interviewed the inner circle of the very best of the remote viewers in all the world. And when I bring up, Ed, some of the topics that you and I have discussed in the fields we will plow tonight, they don't put you down. They don't say anything bad. In fact, Ed, they won't say anything at all. They actually refute. If you bring up topics like the existence of God or the devil or Lucifer or extraterrestrials or anything of that venue, anything of that sort, they don't want to talk about it. Why is that?
Well, it's... When I broke the news of the existence of this project to the public in 1990...
Mm-hmm.
I started it out as a business. In my first few years, it was as a consulting firm, scientific consulting firm to
mm-hmm.
business,
yes,
Fortune 500 companies. And it's pretty hard. You're going to get the business thrown out, the baby with the bathwater, if you start, instead of talking about deep space propulsion projects and which of your hydrogen-based automobile power plant projects are going to fail, that kind of thing. That's one thing. But to all of a sudden start talking to your client about angels,
mm-hmm.
extraterrestrials, and other dimensional intelligences and those kinds of things,
mm-hmm.
you're going to lose some work. And you're going to lose some credibility because
mm-hmm.
you've pushed beyond the envelope.
That's true. I mean, so you're really not stepping on any toes other than your own when you do that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, correct. It's not, and it's not, some of those things are just not politically correct. And some of the things that we've talked about on this show and tonight are not going to be very politically correct.
Well, I never cared about that. All right, so let's do it. Let's talk about some of this. An extraterrestrial agency, it says, has been collecting key material from Earth for at least thousands of years. A specialized team will attempt to interdict this logistics supply route at its primary collection point and the goal to induce contact. You want to break this one down for us?
You know, you and I share one interest. It's not broadcasting. It's the UFO phenomena.
Oh, yes.
And that has been a passion of mine. And the fortunate thing about my work in the last 20 years is because this is remote viewing is an extremely effective information collection modality, it can be used against anything. Everything in the global mind exists as a pattern of information. So you can turn your attention and collect information in this very rigorous fashion against anything.
Well, there's a lot of subjects I cover on this program that I can't tell you whether true or false or upside down or what. But with regard to UFOs, well, Ed, once you've seen one good and close up, then there's not a lot of wonder. Well, there's a lot of wondering to do, but there's not any wondering about whether they're real anymore, because you know they're real, and I do, so.
Well, once we know they're real, that we want the next thing. We want contact. Let's not pussyfoot around here.
You and I both would
love to have contact.
What you mean we, Tonto? I've thought this one over, and maybe, Ed, and maybe not, because I'm not so sure they're friendly. But that's another topic. We'll get to that topic. Right now, let's stick with what we've got here right now. Information on us has been gathered for thousands of years. I presume that these sightings that we have in our skies are part of that process.
Not information, material. I'm not considering the agency out there, which I think are our progenitors, actually. But I'm wondering why they monkey with us. I think that we really are the planet of the apes. And that we are dealing, as far as my team is concerned, with an intelligence that's far superior to us. You know, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of years ahead, technologically speaking.
It would make sense.
Yeah. So this is the planet of the apes. And my, the scientists that I have worked with before, the team, some of the best scientists, some of the best military officers, what we did over the last 20 years was, number one, plan A, locate a hot zone and go there. We did that. That was New Mexico. Lots of great pictures, lots of great what you would call flybys or whatever the heck those things were that were going over our heads.
Yes.
No landing. Plan B, take a scientific team back to the same place and attempt to establish ground truth, which we did. I'm going to brief the public on some of that on November 8th in Las Vegas at the Remote Viewing Colloquium.
Well, give me a little.
Yeah, we set up 31 different types of instruments into recorders, 12-channel recorders. And these instruments were anything from electromagnetic to ultraviolet to infrared, you name it. We had all kinds of sensors out, all kinds of transducers. And so our assignment was to gather ground truth, to prove that the phenomenon was real.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not talking about UFOs that are Air Force or somebody else's Air Force. I'm talking about stuff that we just can't explain that appears to be connected with an intelligence. So we did that. We got some of the nice IR photographs and nice the kinds of waveforms that look like artifacts of something out there.
Okay, so I presume then with your discipline you take that evidence and you use it as a focal point to remote view about what the hell's going on, right?
Well, we use it to cross-cue other systems. So, for instance, because this is a mind tool, so we collect information in terms of narrative descriptors and sketches of whatever we're interested in. In this case, it would be let's say the Travis Walton abduction.
Okay.
We're going to recreate that event, see what went down, look at the mechanics and the dynamics behind it, and then decide how we're going to take the information and the intelligence that we collected and act on it. So that's what we were doing out in New Mexico. We located a hot zone. We went there, made some recordings, but my intent was contact. Most of the science members there, some of them work for the Skunk Works and Department of Defense, they wanted to reverse engineer these magnificent toys.
But you made a statement here that requires explanation. An extraterrestrial agency has been collecting key material from Earth for at least thousands of years. How do you make that determination? How do you make that statement? From what?
Okay, that's plan A. We locate the hot zone, go there. No contact. Plan B, take a scientific team, make measurements, validate the phenomenon. No contact. I want contact.
Okay, I've got that. I'm asking you how you make that statement.
Getting there.
Okay.
Plan C. The statement was made because there's a postulate. How do we, if we can't get contact on their terms, whoever they are, who own those phenomena, and I can sort and sift through some of that later.
Mm-hmm.
But if we can't elicit contact, then let's monkey with them, since we're monkeys. And by that I mean, if you're operating in this neck of the woods, whether you're trans-dimensional coming in from other dimensions,
mm-hmm.
whether you're extragalactic coming in from another galaxy,
could be
you have a base of operations in this parsec.
Yes.
And you're spending a lot of time here on Earth.
Yes.
You need material. You probably need some material.
Yes.
Yeah, and if you're not completely robotic, if you're robotic, you need some form of energy. Now, you may bring that with you and never need any, but if you're of silicon or organic derive, then you need material. So the postulate was, is there a logistics supply train, just like in the military? Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's easier to attack the logistics of an army, their fuel or their food, than it is to hit them, you know, confront them point blank. Let's see if there's a logistics tail that any of these agencies have. And that is what I sicked my expert team against. So we went looking to see if they were taking anything to to use as material or food mm-hmm. or energy supplies. Mm-hmm. And indeed, we found something. We found something that they have been taking for a lot of years, a long, long, long time. They're using it as feedstock to build other material things, and we think in some cases as food, to build food. So those of you who are familiar with the Star Trek TV series, I don't watch television, but I occasionally catch it when I'm on the road traveling. And there's something like an accumulator aboard the vessel that makes food and drink and martinis and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Raw material.
It's actually a replicator, yes.
That's what they call it?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's got to have some feedstock. Those of you who are chemical engineers know what I mean. You have
sure.
feedstock in the pharmaceutical industry.
You put something in to get something out. It modifies
yeah.
it at a molecular basis, whatever. Anyway, you need something, yes.
You assemble it, but you got to have something to assemble it with. And that's what they're doing. They're taking something that is from which they can take it apart and they can use it as basic building blocks for lots of other things.
Hmm.
In this case, what they've been taking for a long, long time is petroleum products, fossil fuels, natural gas products, and oil itself from right out of the ground, long before there were oil wells or gas
wells. They're taking our oil?
Yeah, we're focusing on North America because my team is going to go in and monkey with their primary collection point. We're not going to go in with guns blazing.
No wonder we're paying $1.89 a gallon now.
Well, no, they're not actually. They're taking it from places that are not developed. They're not dipping into our pipelines or anything else like that.
It's still our strategic reserve, though.
Well, what do you mean by our?
Our. I mean, they're
yeah.
taking it from Earth, Earthling's reserve.
Yeah, but if these are our progenitors who put us here in the first place, well, maybe it's time to confront them on that issue.
Well, you say goal to induce contact. Why? I mean, are you sure that you want contact? Let me
no.
put it that way.
No.
Yeah.
But like your guest last night, who we'll talk about, I'm sure.
Oh, my guest last night.
Yeah, I like adventure, too. Let's see what happens. You know what we're doing here, Art, is the reason is we've got nothing to lose. We're going down ecologically and other ways that we are going down, and we are. Let's see if we can get some help from these folks out there. We're going to have to exhibit, I believe, a higher order of intelligence. What that would mean in terms of the practical down where the rubber meets the road, if we show up and start monkeying, let them know that we know where they're taking this and what they're doing.
Yes.
That changes the relationship. Now, they may choose to vaporize us, but that would leave them with the idea that somebody else is still going to know and be able to do this. The higher order of intelligence is that, hey, they know. That means they have a consciousness tool that can look at anything. There's no secrets with remote viewing. As you'll see when I talk about the Chinese secret weapons program.
Mm-hmm.
So we go to the primary resupply point where, like bees or insects, they're taking away the stuff
yes.
and have it's not they. They have tools that they're doing it with. Very, very transcendental technology tools that are going in, grabbing the raw material, fossil fuel in this case, and taking it away. We're not sure where they're taking it to yet, but we know they're taking it. There's a primary collection point in North America, and it's not going to take us many more weeks to locate that. Now we're going to stand there and see what happens. Well, I'm not. I'm going to have a couple of members of my team. I'll watch them from a distance.
Safe distance.
Yeah. If they disappear and don't come back in like 20 minutes, then all this will run like hell. But it's still a good plan.
No doubt. Young students.
But we're really going to do this, and it does, if you think about it, it does represent a whole new game plan for them. What are they going to do now?
Yeah, what is your best estimate of their intentions toward us? Are they friend or are they foe? This is a very important question for all of us.
I don't think... I have to remain neutral on this one. I think that there's definitely an agenda here, and they're presenting themselves as a conundrum. It always changes. One minute there's a swamp monster, next minute there's a UFO over here. They're monkeying with us. I know they are. In the secret world of the top secret world. I remember 20 years ago when we put a new generation of spy satellites up. I can only talk about this in generalities. The old generation of spy satellites was picking up glowing things next to nuclear weapon supply dumps and nuclear submarines. And then as soon as we put up this new generation of technology with different spectral collection characteristics and other things, the old collection systems, the old spy satellites, no longer registered these glowing things. Now they popped up on the new ones only.
Maybe.
Which means we're being screwed with.
Yeah, being screwed with. Maybe you can answer this, Ed. This is I actually read it to last night's guest. I think it's very interesting. Art, I followed the UFO phenomena for 33 years. I'm troubled by the fact that certain subjects can't or won't be discussed publicly, even by UFO researchers and advocates who acknowledge them among themselves. Here it is. Many UFO researchers have noted that UFOs have changed their appearance over the years. It's not just the viewer's interpretation. Like in the 1970s, they were typically saucer-shaped metallic craft. Not so today. Indeed, it turns out that UFOs do indeed seem to change with the times and appear, the important part here, appear as we expect them to. In the older days, when they were depicted only as silver saucers, we got silver saucers. Today, we get triangles, we get all kinds of different things that people expect. They seem to be fulfilling our expectations as times and the phenomena changes.
I can say two things about that, and of course I'm familiar with this phenomenon, this epiphenomenon in this case. Number one is that, as experimental psychologists know, and Madison Avenue and Hollywood, novelty acts as a stimulus. If UFOs still presented as the saucers that they did in 1957-47, nobody would look up anymore. Oh, it's just that stuff again.
Oh, I don't know.
Really, there wouldn't be that, which, oh, it's just that again. The novelty acts as a stimulus. And also, on another side of the house, I think it was Aquinas, Thomas Aquinas, or St. Augustine, who said, angels use the symbols of the age to communicate with man. They do not introduce new knowledge or new symbols. They use man's own symbols to communicate with him.
All right. Ed, I'm still not sure that you answered my question fully. You talked to me about the gathering of materials and that you've monitored that, but how do you project that it's an extraterrestrial agency that's absolutely responsible for doing the collecting? How do you know that part?
Here's what we know. They are capable of at least trans-dimensional movement. They can move into another dimension. I won't get into all the technicalities that allow us to know that, but they can move into another dimension in and out that way. That could be time, it could be a space dimension, but they can do that. Number two, the agency is directly connected with an underground area on the planet Mars. And that underground area is a real operations center that has been responsible for an untold number of so-called UFO close encounters of the second kind sometimes third kind. And we know a lot about that underground post. There's most of the things that are moving around in there and are creating these spheres that cut crop circles and project other things down here in terra firma are sentient machines. They are not carbon-based life forms. They're machines that are extremely intelligent.
I remember a number of years ago, Ed, when you said one night something is alive or something is coming alive.
Waking up.
Waking up under the surface of Mars. Well, it sounds like its second cup of coffee has been had already and it's plenty awake at the moment. Is that accurate?
It's getting too complex for me, Art, to handle. It's really getting complex. There's a lot of things coming down here. It's like rivers of time converging. There's a confluence of events, however you wish to describe it. But there's so much information that we're getting as a team. I'm going to limit my activity to attempting to interdict the supply route of this outside agency.
All right.
And see what happens.
All right. Hold on. See what happens indeed. Hold on, Ed. We'll be back to you after the break. We are obligated to do that, and we'll get some news and information, then we'll be back. We'll talk about the People's Republic of China and the most secret weapons program that they have, because Ed apparently knows what it is. From the high desert in the middle of the night, this is Coast to Coast AM.
Subscribe to After Dark. Call toll-free 1-888-727-5505. Kingdom of Nye, from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. And the wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
So, folks, if an extraterrestrial agency has been collecting key materials from Earth, we have to ask, for what reason? For our salvation? Or perhaps will it be our Waterloo? I rather think most of us can buy into the fact that we're being watched. Perhaps material is being gathered from Earth in investigation of us, or something is going on. Most people can buy into that, even according to the Roper polls and all the rest of it. They sort of buy into that, that something is in fact going on. This is a real phenomena. But I think the key question is it our ultimate salvation or Waterloo? And I guess you really can't answer that, Ed, but wouldn't that be a worthy target to address in some manner, a friend or foe? What are we facing?
I think we're facing something that it's just beyond us in terms of, it's beyond our ken, Art. I really think it's beyond our ken. I think these are our progenitors. They're also part of what we would like to think of as a federation. And if we can't gain entry by waving at them and figuratively speaking the kinds of things that I've done in the past, let's kick the door in and see what happens. Because life is short, and I think there's a sense of urgency here. I think this conundrum that they've posed, and I believe that this nonsense that we see is posed as a conundrum, a puzzle, a problem to be solved. If it's not solved quickly, I don't think we're ever going to become, at least this generation, members of what might be a federation.
Hmm.
And when I talk, yes, they're collecting a lot of things, information and perhaps other things. But what I'm saying is they have a logistics tail. They need raw material to make things with whatever those things are somewhere else. And they've been taking it from this neck of the woods in a primary collection and transfer point that's in North America. And we can find that pretty easily. So that's what I'm saying. This is their site. It's our turn to call the shots instead of them.
That'd be nice for a change. All right, switching gears. The People's Republic of China's most secret weapons program. Well, hey, there's an interesting topic. Their most secret weapons program. What do you know about that? And why did you even look?
I wanted to show you what it's like to have a world without secrets.
Okay.
I remember a few years ago when Dean came in, was coming out with this secret project called It or Ginger, and everybody was speculating on what that might be. And on your show, I elaborated point by point what this machine would be, that it would be something that you ride like a scooter. That
you sure did. Yeah, you really did. That's right.
Okay, well, I bring that up to show you how, unlike the children's sketches that you see in the Mind Dazzle Kids kit over there and that site, what we can do is far more, as adults who are trained, is far more sophisticated. If you look in last month's collector's edition, U.S. News and World Report, on spy stories,
yeah,
it was out all month. On page 58, there's a two-page article on the former remote viewing unit. It's entitled Clear Targets in the Mind's Eye, and you'll see a trained remote viewer sketching a piece of equipment at a top-secret former USSR base. Well, that's what I'm talking about here. Let's use that and turn it on instead of, let's say, Microsoft's most secret new project or whatever. Let's take a look at the People's Republic of China's most secret military weapon. Now, why do we know we're on that? Because many 20 years of using these, we know that these particular ways that we set up a problem, a cue, we call it.
Yes.
That the cue is interpreted literally, just like an internet search engine search. Whatever you stick up there in the search engine, you pops out something that's connected to it. And in this case, it's cut and dried. We know that search term works.
The only thing about search engines would be that a lot of times you get results that you also don't want. They're mixed in with what you do want. They're not so refined as to be able to give you only what you want.
Right. 120 hours in the classroom as a remote viewing student will teach you how to get around those kinds of things and to know how to set the problems up correctly. We certainly don't want to go into those technicalities here.
All right. But their new weapons, their most secret weapon system.
Yeah. Now, most secret weapon system, for instance, what do you think ours would be here in the United States?
Huh. You're asking me.
What's the most powerful deterrent that we have? Nuclear weapons, but it's certainly not our most secret, is it?
Well, it's the most powerful that we know about. See, I was trying to think.
I'll tell you right now, at this moment in time, it's still the most powerful thing that we have, and it's a great deterrent. But the existence of the program is not secret.
Right.
We do have other programs that are very secret, and you will live and die and not know about them. That's the way it's supposed to be. But that's not to say we'll ever use them, for instance. We may not. So what I'm getting to here is, and I'll slow down a little bit because these points are important. The American public is not educated in terms of what its military does at the Office of Secretary of Defense levels.
Right.
The programs that are really secret are secret, that secret, and that classified for a couple of different reasons. One is to make sure that a potential enemy or threat doesn't get access to the information so they can develop a defense against it.
Of course.
Okay. But the other reason is less known, and that is because it gives away or telegraphs the goal of the country. And it may do, and not only that, it may not just telegraph the end goal, but it may be something that a country is developing that would become highly embarrassing, very, very embarrassing in terms of history.
Yeah.
Let's say, for instance, the U.S. had a secret project to assassinate the leaders of the U.K. or Australia, and that we felt for some reason that we need to take out the prime ministers of those countries or the presidents of those countries. Now, you wouldn't want history to know about that, would you?
No, but I think it would be more likely France.
Don't get me started. Right. Okay, even better example. Okay, that's what I mean, those kinds of things, too. And in the case of China, the most secret weapons program is similar to that. It's very diabolical, and it's very brilliant, as one might guess. But it's like that. It's something that is not as powerful as a nuclear weapon, but its existence telegraphs and indicates what the extent that country is willing to go to become number one in the world. China, right, makes, China makes 50-year plans. We make 10.
Yeah.
Other countries make 5.
Bring it down for me. Are you telling me that they have some weapons program that would kill a specific leader of a nation and or leaders or the higher government echelons? Just...
See, I knew this would happen.
Well,
I use
of course.
An example. I try to use an example that would be an analogy to set the problem up, and then people say, Ed said this. Oh, no, that's
no,
not what I'm saying.
Okay, then clarify it for me. What
okay,
specifically?
I'm saying that the program, if it becomes known that China would do such a diabolical thing,
yes,
it shows the extent to which they would go,
yes,
in terms of, let's say, lack of ethics, to become number one, and you know that they want to become number one, right?
Yes, I know that.
Okay.
So then what is their most secret weapons program?
I still need to put this thing in a little bit more context.
All right.
We won the Cold War because the former Soviet Union ran out of money.
Pretty much.
Yeah. And I will tell you right now, as a former intelligence officer, the Soviets are brilliant. The SS-18 missile it's undefeatable at the time. And they had many, many more extremely exotic, brilliant weapon system. And it's not because of their technology that they lost the war and our superior technology. It's because they ran out of money and that's all.
Well, that's our superior economy.
Yeah. We won by default.
Yeah.
Okay. That we were victorious by default.
I agree with that.
Okay. That did not go unnoticed by the People's Republic of China leaders, did it?
No.
Nothing goes unnoticed. Their intelligence is
very good point. Very good point. They're an economic giant and getting bigger by the minute.
Mm-hmm. Their intelligence is superb. They stole some of the most sophisticated nuclear, the D-5 missile. They stole the technology, the D-5 missile, one of our most sophisticated nuclear missiles.
We all know that's been going on, sure.
Right?
The
and
scandals.
They know what's going on, too. More than the U.S. does. We used to joke around as intelligence officers, if you really wanted to know what's going on in Area 51, you call the Soviet embassy. They'll tell you, because they have to know.
Yeah,
you can do it as
the first clear pictures of Area 51 came from, guess where, Russian satellites.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
they have to be on their toes. We can do it as,
okay, well, so you're right about China. They're economic giants. They're not going to make the same mistake the Soviets made.
Now they're going into space soon.
Very soon. Very soon. They're going to have a man in space. Perhaps even in the next few days, there'll be a big headline. Mm-hmm. Or he'll not make it, whatever.
And they're doing that for one reason. It's a new space race out there. That's the new strategic high ground, because they know what the U.S. plans are in space, and they cannot afford to be left behind.
I hate to say this, but I would say in that regard, thank God. And it might seem strange to say that, but you know what? Back when we had a space race going with the Russians, we were really active in space. We were making leaps and jumps and bounds and going a mile a minute. But since the Soviets faded as a threat, so did our space program.
You're wrong.
It faded. Oh, but it did. Well,
you're
I
wrong.
Mean, parts of it did, Ed. The man
The civilian parts did.
Yeah, how about the part of going on past the moon to Mars and beginning to reach out a little bit?
I agree with you there. That's sad. The scientific part. But the military part, it did not.
Well,
I guess I have to agree.
Yeah, sure.
This is what's going on now. The new high ground is the moon. It's not space. You're vulnerable in space. You're vulnerable to directed energy weapons and all kinds of other things.
Sure.
EMP bursts and all of that.
Yes.
It's the moon that's the new high ground. The moon. And we would love to put nuclear weapons in space, but because we signed a treaty saying, no, we can't do that. And so there's some loopholes out there. I used to love to look at different countries, the loopholes that they created and how creative countries could be. The Russians, for instance, because they signed the Biological Warfare Treaty, still created something that was a biological origin, but it did not meet the criterion for a biological weapon per se, but it was still much as effective or much more effective. So that was a loophole that they created. U.S. has a loophole too. We're going to put beam weapons in space. So not nuclear weapons, but a beam weapon.
Beam
directed
weapons.
Energy weapon.
Yes, sir.
Edward Teller was a big proponent of the X-ray lasers.
That's right.
But we're not just going to put them in space while they're vulnerable to ground-based weapon systems or other space-based weapon systems. We're going to put are big weapons on the moon, but not just on the moon. We're going to put them on the backside of the moon or right on the limb of the moon so that the beam director can pop up, fire, and go back down and remain protected. That's what we're going to do, and the Chinese know it. And so they've got some plans of their own.
And they are?
They're not going to let us do that because all that costs money. And we're not going to be able to do it because China may just go ahead and use their weapon. If we don't have the money to do this very expensive project, then China wins by default. And so what the most secret weapon is very diabolical and very brilliant. It is a bioengineered biological warfare agent, a phytopathological agent that attacks only wheat. And if they launch that thing in the United States surreptitiously, they will have plausible denial, and the wheat crop in North America will become quickly infected. When that happens, the economies will drop to pieces virtually overnight. Now, Chinese eat rice and soy, don't they?
Yes.
So if our wheat crop goes, we have nothing to export and nothing to eat. And we can't afford now to put anything into space.
You're saying they have a weapon that, if deployed, would kill all our wheat?
Yes. That is why it's so highly classified.
Yeah.
Now, do we have weapons like that? I'm not going to go into that because I'm an American. But I'm just saying, this is a world without secrets, my world. And I'm showing you what we can do with it. Now, this telegraphs the extent to which they're willing to go. And you bet, of course, if they launched that and somehow we found out that they did, and we wouldn't because they would do it very clandestinely and surreptitiously, but if we found out they did, all hell would come down on them very quickly in terms of nuclear weapons.
You think that if we found out they killed our wheat, we'd respond with nuclear weapons?
Yes, I do, because I know what U.S. policy is. It's stated. Check, you can actually find that in policy. Any country that would use a weapon of mass destruction like that.
And actually, what would happen? What would you project would occur if all the wheat across America died? The results of that would be?
Economically or in terms of militarily?
Both.
If we knew economically, it would be the end of our country. Perhaps Canada's economy as well. Because right now we have to use we don't have sustainable farming to begin with.
I can only assume a weapon of this sort could not be a chemical agent that would have to be sprayed everywhere. This would have to be some sort of bioengineered item that would perpetuate its own existence, like some sort of horrible virus that would sweep across all of our wheat.
Well, it's exactly that. It would either be a fungi or a virus, and there are a number that attack wheat. Now, they have to be careful, too, because soy and rice, for instance, are also grasses, maize, sorghum, wheat, corn. They're all grasses. So you've got to be really careful when you genetically engineer this new particular agent that has to be highly virile and fast-acting.
They could be committing suicide.
Correct, yeah.
By letting loose something like that. But you do honestly believe, you know they have such a weapon now.
I know it via remote viewing, and I also know what's possible because of my own involvement in defensive biological warfare programs. For instance, it is, as you know, the so-called ethnic bomb is possible. I could right now, genetic engineering has reached a point where you could tag on to any particular pathogen or virus, something that would attack only blonde people or people who are susceptible to Tay-Sachs disease or whatever you want. But that's much more difficult to do than to take out wheat crops. And our wheat is very, very fragile now. The immune system of our crops in America is really, really on thin ice. So it's a very, very viable thing, very viable, and there's easy, plausible denial on this weapon. Too.
Yeah, well, I can see, for example, that the Chinese as a state would certainly not directly do something like that, but would they put it in the hands of some terrorist who would just love to see the U.S. economy go up in flames and starving people and whatever it would produce.
Or if they put it in the hands of a terrorist, or if they did it themselves, it doesn't make any difference. It's still a Chinese weapon. And the goal of that particular weapon is to break us economically so that we cannot achieve the military high ground. So this is the big, broad picture here, and I'm nutshelling it for you.
You're saying that at the highest levels we would know it came from the Chinese, but we would have to...
No. We would never know. They must have plausible denial, or we would attack them with nuclear weapons. That's a weapon of mass destruction. It's anti-crop warfare.
But if Ed knows this, then don't you suppose the CIA is aware of the Chinese work on this kind of a weapon?
No.
Think they're aware?
No, they are not. They're aware of the possibility. But even if they're aware of the possibility, they would never be able to have chain of custody if it really happened, Art. That's why it's so classified. That's why clandestine special operations, you never know what hit you. Who was that masked man? You don't know what country it was.
Sure enough.
Our CIA guys who, you know, were hired guns, they're not allowed to have any identifying characteristics, including tattoos. All their weapons are marked, you know, they're from Bulgaria and Sweden, wherever the heck. You don't have chain of custody tracked back to the United States.
Yeah.
What it's all about.
Gotcha, Ed. All right, stand by. We've got a lot of territory to cover, to be sure. Can you imagine letting a weapon of that nature go, no matter who it was who let it go, and suddenly all the wheat everywhere simply began to die, and pretty quickly at that. From the high desert, in the middle of the night, this is Coast to Coast AM.
Dial 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. Or use the wildcard line at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Network.
It is indeed. In a moment, we'll talk with Major Ed Dames about an update on the planned use of a nuclear weapon by Korea. Stay right there. Once again, Major Ed Dames. Ed, I don't have personal knowledge of this because I didn't hear it, but I've had a whole lot of email from people who said you did a show with George sometime during the week, sometime in the past, when you made some sort of statement about the beginning of the war in Iraq and the use of a nuclear weapon by North Korea. Can you roll over that?
Yeah, sure. When we search the global mind, or what we call the matrix, and we used that term long before Hollywood did, as remote viewers, mind is outside of time, so you can look over the horizon and describe things that are big just as easily as you can describe something that has already happened or something that's happening now.
Mm-hmm.
So think of mind as perhaps the fifth dimension, as a good hypothetical example, and time as perhaps the fourth. We're doing that right now for Japanese TV. This month we are special, and we're going to describe the next catastrophic Japanese earthquake, something that is very close, very interesting to the Japanese people. We're going to describe the next catastrophic earthquake. It's what location, not city necessarily, but where the most damage and loss of life will be, where that will be in Japan. And then we have to backtrack and look at, because we can't attach a calendar time to that, we have to look at the nearest recognizable preceding event.
Yes, I understand.
Yeah, we have to do that so that when we see that happen, whether it's an election or a particular festival, then the Japanese people can know that soon after this particular area over here is going to get it.
All right.
In the case of North Korea, about 6 years ago in your program, I began to tell you that using those same search techniques, by looking at the idea, remote viewing the ideas of the next use of a military, the next use of a nuclear weapon in anger,
mm-hmm.
would be on the Korean Peninsula,
mm-hmm.
by the North Koreans.
No question. You've said it right along.
And that was about 6 years ago.
And that was long before the Koreans, by the way, stepped up the pace by about 1,000% on their nuclear program. They claim to have X number of bombs now, and probably do. So, yes, you...
Oh, yeah, people were telling me, it's probably going to be India and Pakistan over the Kashmir issue, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, okay. I know.
Because this skill, see, is true. The kids that learn this will have what we call second sight. Like it or not, it's coming. And they'll be a whole lot better at it.
All right, but with regard to this specific statement?
About the use of it?
Yes, sir.
Well, they're going to use one or two. They're upping the level of nuclear blackmail now.
Did you set a timetable is what I'm asking. Did you say that very shortly after the war in Iraq got underway that they would use one on a show that you did not do with me?
What I said was that it appears that they're going to wait until the U.S. commits a whole lot of forces overseas,
right,
before they use one,
right?
And I thought that it would be during, that it would be shortly after, about a month or so after our invasion of Iraq, that they would use it, but that appears to be incorrect.
Well, you're not the only one who doesn't quite have their timetable together. Earlier tonight on, I think it was NBC News, somebody in the administration said Americans had better now get prepared to be in Iraq for up to 8 years. 8 years. So that timetable seems to have been a little amiss as well. Perhaps your prediction mixes somewhere down the line as we're in Iraq?
Well, I will tell you that I stand by, as I have for the last 6 years and all of my professional team, that the next use of the weapon is going to be on the Korean Peninsula. There's no doubt in our military minds about that. The time, though, you know that time is a problem in our work looking out.
Yes.
So
yes,
what I'll do on the second remote viewing colloquium, when that is given, and that's called timeline, what we're doing when we present that is we're looking at these very, very critical events in human history coming up, and we are going to tag them with markers. When you see this happen, whether it's the Academy Awards or something else like that, then the next thing you'll see will be this. So we can bracket these critical events into some type of a window, because we cannot pull out calendrical time and remote viewing. Calendar time doesn't work. It's not part of this global mind. It's a convention that doesn't appear to be practical.
Well, you know how radio listeners are, Ed. When they hear a prediction made on a radio show, they nail it down, and they expect it to happen within a certain amount of time. They have a very, we all have a very short attention span, and if it doesn't happen pretty quick, then they're going to say, well, it just is not so. I've seen a lot of your predictions manifest over time, not exactly at the time that you said it would happen necessarily. I've seen you miss some of those. This is a case of that, I guess, but that doesn't mean it won't happen. You're saying it's still going to happen, right?
It's a fait accompli. It's going to happen, yeah.
Well,
so
I would have to say,
over the horizon.
Ed, I'd have to say it's much more likely to happen today than it was 6 years ago when you first began to talk about it. God, heaven knows they've got the weapons.
And it's so those classes of events are so big. They're quite easy to remote view. They're quite easy to describe. And I think that there's one or two scenarios in which this may happen. The North Koreans will up the level of nuclear blackmail by testing a nuclear weapon. And I've said that 2 years ago on your program. It looks like they're going to test one, and it might be open air, believe it or not. And that may evoke a response that causes them to use a weapon in anger against U.S. forces on the peninsula.
Yeah, if they tested above ground, it would evoke a response, all right.
And that response may be what elicits the second event, which is to use one in anger. Remember our search term, the next use of a military weapon, nuclear weapon, in anger.
Yes, indeed.
So that doesn't, the test doesn't qualify for that, but the next one after does. Yeah.
And any update on the timeline, since it was not during or immediately following our invasion of Iraq, then...
We can do it. We can do it. It's going to take, and by the time, if we have 2 months, and you give me 2 months, we can come back to you with a statement. I will come back and stand by a statement of what that marker will be, a recognizable event that's very close, preceding the first use of a weapon on the peninsula. Something that everybody will recognize, so that when that particular event happens, it will be sooner than later after that event. But we have to actually do the work.
Okay. All right. This is something that you and I have talked about for years now, and it's stuck in everybody's craw, as well it should. The kill shot from the sun. You suggest that our star, our sun, is going to go on a rampage and begin to affect, or your word, terminate, Earth's living system dynamics. And you, with a little dark humor, suggest please cancel any long-term plans for your future. Now, this is something that actually has worried me for some time, Ed. I've been looking at the dynamics of the sun, and I've been looking at some real hard science, which would indicate that every now and then a sun like ours, which is thought to be stable, like ours, relatively stable, suddenly does a very unstable thing, and that could result in virtually a planet becoming sterilized or scorched or who knows. But I've been watching our sun very closely. You obviously still feel that this so-called kill shot or problem with our sun is ahead of us, that it's going to occur, yes?
I absolutely do, more than ever. We've done more and more work on this because it's geophysically a precedent. We've never seen anything like this before on terra firma, so it was difficult to work out all of the geophysics and the physics involved in this particular thing. We didn't know what we're looking at. We're just observers as remote viewers. We had to take all the observations and fit them into some type of known science. We did that, and what's coming down in our lifetime, yours and mine, is a whole bunch of globs of protons from our sun slamming into Earth. And I don't mean just one. I mean a few shots. So the Earth will get it like a rotisserie as it spins. But a whole bunch, a glob of protons, mass from the sun, slamming into the atmosphere. And that's going to happen in our lifetime, Art.
That's really interesting, because there was just a science fiction movie out that I do recommend, by the way. I mean, it's not one of the greatest ever made, but it was pretty good scientifically, called The Core. And in the movie The Core, the Earth, for a period of time, loses its magnetic field. The magnetic field essentially protects us against blasts from the sun. That's what it's there for, at least blasts that we've known in the past, ones that the magnetic field can handle. It shows a magnetic field that virtually halts, stops.
And did you see that movie, Aaron?
Yes.
Aaron Eckhart, the star, I had to train for the movie that I'm in, Suspect Zero.
Hey, you're
kidding. He's the star of that movie, too.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was quite good, quite a good piece of science fiction. But, I mean, the dynamics, the science behind that, pretty fair in the movie, I'd judge it, and pretty good movie at that. So, anyway, are you suggesting that something will go wacky with our magnetic field and open us to something of that sort, or that there's going to be such a large shot from the sun, such a disturbance, that our magnetic field simply won't save us?
I don't know, Art. I know that two things happen that are catastrophic globally. Number one is that protons come right down to the deck, not just once, but several times. And number two, the Earth rotates on its axis perhaps as much as 17 degrees. So I don't know which one causes the other yet.
You know, down on deck, there is a phrase that I can reach back. I can reach back quite a number of years, Ed. You know, and it always appears I'm on your side, or maybe it appears that way. But I remember you predicting, but saying that the jet stream would come down on deck. And by gosh, within a year of your saying that, I saw weathermen begin to actually say on television that the jet stream actually had come down on deck. They used those words, down on deck, and knocked down forests and stuff on the top of mountains in Colorado, I think it was, and other things, but that the jet stream had dipped right down to Earth. You said that. It did happen.
Well, there's another word that you'll see happen, too. There's something else in terms of, you know, the grand scheme of things here on Terra Firma. I don't think it's that big, but in terms of you and I and our day-to-day life, it is, and that's a global economic collapse. You'll see that term used, too, because that's around the corner as well.
Well, let's stick with the sun for a second. Is there any preceding event that we can look for? I mean, time-wise, I know it's tough, but when we're talking about something as serious as our sun going on a rampage against us, it'd be nice to have some idea of when.
Yeah, that's the topic of my second colloquium called Timeline. Right now we're working those out. Some of the things that we'll see, for instance, this grand cataclysm, this will end World War III. World War III, in terms of the global mind, started when the U.S., during the first Gulf War, 1990. That started World War III. When you look at that search term, that idea, how the global mind adjudicates that particular idea, it starts during the first Gulf War, and it ends when all the warring forces lose interest in fighting. Because something else interrupts.
Something bigger comes along.
They reprioritize there, and they go home. So this grand cataclysm is marked by, it starts out slowly.
Mm-hmm.
When you see certain things like rivers changing their course, we know that that's one key point where a river will do, you know, a real sharp bend. Something will be happening to the Earth where rivers start to change their course dramatically. That's one of the things. Another thing is, as you already know, since you wrote the book literally, you're going to have very huge, violent storms. That's another indicator. Something is wrong with the Earth's magnetic field. Geophysics are growing screwy. When you see those kinds of things, in order to save one's derriere, you need to be in a place where there's a lot of fresh water. It has to be far inland or very high as well. And those are the two criteria and you need to be underground for a while because the winds will pick up very high speeds. So what we're seeing, each of our professionals, when they look at their own lives ahead, they're looking at the optimum way for themselves to survive is to be in a place that has an underground shelter that they can go into occasionally, like a fallout shelter.
So I recall you're saying that at some point the Earth's inhabitants would have to find their way underground and would have to have a way to survive for quite a period of time or some period of time underground, yes?
No. That's not what I said. I said that they need to be underground for actually a short period of time, for perhaps a couple of weeks or more.
Well, that's a while.
Until the winds die down.
Yes.
But you don't have to move on the ground. You just need a shelter from these extreme high winds.
Well, if you're going to need to be underground for 2 weeks, Ed, that's a fairly serious amount of preparation you're going to have to do.
You need to think about it now. Right now, where would you go? Are there subway tunnels around? Are there basements, something else like that? If there are not, it's best to kind of keep that in the back of your mind now in case this particular little announcement that I'm making, which I'm sure is just entertainment to most people, and just in case it's true, I would suggest to many of your listeners that you just might want to think about where would you go if the winds picked up to 300 miles an hour.
Huh.
And we haven't even talked about what would happen to the coastlines if the Earth turns on its axis 17 degrees. Then we're looking at, like, the city off the coast of Cuba that's 2,200 feet underwater. How did that happen? It didn't just sink.
You're suggesting something of this magnitude occurred to drop that city?
I'm more than suggesting. I'm stating that unequivocally. The Earth turned, whatever that city that was above ground went to 2,200 feet underwater.
Well, 300-mile-an-hour winds would, for the most part, clean everything down to the deck.
It's not worldwide, though. I mean, you can't have 300-mile-an-hour winds all the time across the globe. It would be through belts and bands, those kinds of things. And
that would make sense.
When you have water that inundates huge tracts of land, you have land that rises in other places, too, at the same time. So, you know, the globe changes.
Well, it wouldn't do you any good to be underground if you're in the wrong place and it sinks.
You bet.
So where are safe places?
Well, we know a couple. Again, I'll be discussing these the general public and the decision makers in colloquia. A couple of places. One place that we know is safe because we did this work a long time ago for a person is just to the west of Glacier National Park. That area there is safe. The Lake Valley region of Canada is safe. North America, Switzerland is safe. Where else have we found? Those are the three that, off the top of my head, I know right now.
What about where you are? What about the islands there?
Not bad. If on the Big Island of Hawaii or Maui, you've got volcanoes that are 14,000 feet high, so you can go up very quickly. And there's plenty of fresh water, and there's plenty to eat.
And that's why you're there?
No, that's not why I'm here.
It's one of the reasons you're there.
One of the reasons, yes.
Okay, hold on. We'll come back, and we've got one more hour of sheer terror ahead. My guest is Major Ed Dames, otherwise known as Dr. Doom, for reasons that, if you've been listening, are already apparent. I don't know if I like the idea of being able to look into the future and maybe even my future. At any rate, we'll continue to probe from the high desert. This is Coast to Coast AM.
Take a ride.
Call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 775-727-1222 or call the wildcard line at 775-727-1295. To talk with Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Those, in fact, are the numbers. In a moment, we're going to go to the phones with Major Ed Dane. So if you have questions, and I know you do, then you might want to line up just about right now. A few moments ago, Ed mentioned a national park, and I thought I'd mention one. There's a big rumble, bad choice words, going on out there right now, Ed, about Yellowstone National Park. And scientists have been detecting some bulges that are very discomforting. Do you know anything at all, or can you speak to that at all?
We have not looked at it as a team, nor have I as an individual remote viewer.
Well,
I did respond to someone who emailed me.
Yes.
And I said, I'm afraid to look. I was kind of tongue-in-cheek, but actually I am a little bit apprehensive.
Ed Dames, afraid to look?
Yeah, I mean, you think about the ramifications of that thing.
I know.
It's a super quick.
Yes.
While we're on the subject, many of the things we talked about tonight, if people want more information, they can go to my website, remoteviewing2003.com, and there's links to a lot of the things we've been discussing.
All right. One of the items that you had put down was a note on World War III, and I assume you just gave that to us with the real start of what you consider to be World War III, or is there a further note on World War III?
There's ups and downs in terms of a timeline. There, for instance, obviously, the use of a nuclear weapon on the part of the North Koreans on the Korean Peninsula
mm-hmm.
is certainly part of World War III, but it's not the start, nor is it the end. It's a high point.
It's a high or a low point, I guess, depending on how you look at it.
Milestone. But it's within, World War III is a long, slow burn. Has ups and downs.
Okay. I do want to give you a chance again to this November 8th thing in Las Vegas, the remote viewing.
Colloquium. The remote viewing colloquium, it's ongoing. It's every quarter. What I'll do is present to the public our detailed findings. And this first one I'm going to present to what the military team, unprecedented data, what both the military team and a U.S. scientific team that I led found about UFOs, our work against the UFO enigma, those kinds of things. And we'll
pretty interesting stuff. All right. It's going to be where, please?
It's going to be in Las Vegas on Saturday, November 8th, right up the road from you at the Imperial Palace Hotel.
Okay.
If you want to know more about it, again, you can go to remoteviewing2003.com or you can go to the ouraliensreal.com website, or you can call, if you would like to register, a number. Shall I give that to you?
You're welcome to, sure.
The number to register for Danger Close, which is the title of my presentation on November 8th, is 1-866-607-8439.
Danger Close. That's a good title. I just wish we knew how close, Ed.
Well, we will. It just takes more work, or we'll be overcome by events one way or another.
Because of the nature of the material that you talk about on this radio program, and I guess elsewhere in events like this, you really are. I billed you at the beginning of the program, I think, as the most liked and hated guest that I have. You are that. You are the most liked and hated. Oh, my goodness, Ed. People write some things about you, and I'm the recipient of those things. They either hate your guts or just absolutely love you. Or there is a certain group that finds a high entertainment value in you, and they just turn off a lot of what you have to say, which people tend to do. And a lot of people, you, as I'm sure you understand, if they don't turn it off, they get angry. Oh, boy, do they get angry. So
I'm aware of all that. I love my work. I love my job. It's passion. And I feel very I have a lot of gratitude about being in my position. Many people would love to be in my position.
Oh,
but
sure.
I know.
predicting future disaster and hunger and starvation is just a great biz.
Well, we do good things, too. I told you on the last show that we saved the lives of one of the most prominent physicians in the world.
It is true.
By looking at intractable illnesses and their cures and treatment.
Anyway, I say these things ahead of putting you on the phone with some folks out here, which is what I'm about to do, so no guarantees on what's coming, Ed.
Fire away.
Uh-huh. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Good morning.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, hi. I'm from Great Falls, Montana.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I just want to know if he has seen anything about the Illuminati in the United States sending the ships to North Korea first to attack North Korea to take, you know, to take the site or whatever off of Bush and his people because of Iraq.
Okay, I'm going to extend your question a little bit. Her question was about the Illuminati perhaps orchestrating some sort of attack. A guest I had an earlier tonight mentioned the shadow government, Ed. Is there a giant agency of political power separate from those that we know as our elected officials driving U.S. policy, and might such a group do something like she just talked about?
I don't know what a group like that would do, but I do know that bankers and people that command energy worldwide are very powerful and did, in fact, have a great influence on George Bush Sr. in the first Gulf War. That's all I can say about that. I don't recognize the term Illuminati. I've never researched that as a topic.
Maybe you should.
I hear it a lot.
So do I. That's why I said perhaps you should if you want to construct a list of things that would be good to look at. I'd love to know if there's anything to this whole Illuminati thing.
Well, you know, sometimes I'm a smart guy, fairly smart. I'm smart enough to know, not for instance, to look at, let's say, the Cali cartel's major drug transshipment points in Latin America or something else like that, because my lifespan will be very limited, very short. So if you run up against something that is going to hurt you real bad, you know, this might be one of those things. I've seen it before in other ways. For instance, the Soldatenbund, the one that the group of soldiers that escaped from Nazi Germany with a lot of gold and ended up in South America.
Yes.
They're still around, and you don't want to mess with them. So there's folks you don't mess with out there. It's just the way things are.
Even
you want to stay alive.
Well, certainly then in a remote viewing public venue or even on the radio or that sort of thing is what you mean.
Anywhere. Yeah. They know you're looking at it. You're the biggest threat. Exposure is the biggest threat there is to a group of people like that. You expose them, you're in trouble.
Okay.
Not to say I'm a coward, but I sure know, you know, I'm not stupid either.
Well, then, yes, but reading not very far between those words, you obviously feel there's probably something to the whole Illuminati business, huh?
If by Illuminati people mean something like a tripartite or a worldwide group of people that promulgate power for power's sake and could care less about anything else, then yes, there is a group like that.
Okay. Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Good morning.
Hello, Ed. Hello, Art.
Yes, hi, sir.
You kind of stole my thunder, Art. I was going to ask about Yellowstone, but I have a follow-up.
Well, Ed said that he was afraid to look at Yellowstone. How's
yeah,
that?
I caught that. I was wondering, given that man has a time on Earth and a time to be called up, what if a predominant figure were targeted for an assassination, and Art, if Ed visualized this concept, this happening, what would he do if it came to fruition?
Yeah, well, there, you know, okay, I'll twist that a little bit. Is it possible to foresee something like the political assassination of a figure? Ed.
You know, it's interesting. Geophysical events are just as easy as pie. For instance, if Yellowstone was going to pop,
you could find out
very, very easily. Very
yes.
easily.
However,
large events like nuclear weapons use, for instance, or something like that, very easy to look at ahead of time. But when you're dealing with individual with people.
Yes.
And individual decisions where you have just a few people making decisions, it's then over the horizon radar, the screen becomes really gray. It's a fuzzy zone. It's not clear and cut. And we've seen this before time and time again by trying to track this loose Al-Qaeda cell within the boundaries of the continental United States. Every time we look at what they want to hit, you know, it's just a plan.
Yes.
Sometimes in the case of San Diego, for instance, San Diego Harbor, where we told Navy security and Coast Guard security what the plan was in order to set mines there at the harbor to take out our boomers. Did we prevent that from happening
Yes.
or not? So I don't know if we're dealing with a paradox or whatever.
Our own government has exactly the same difficulty. I mean, they have called potential, certainly warnings of potential strikes by terrorists that have not come to pass. Well, did they prevent something that was about to occur by exposing the fact that they knew and were ready for it, or did it just not happen? Well, who knows?
Yeah, and we've had instances in the past where we've looked ahead at events that looked pretty solid and did involve an individual, and in some cases an assassination attempt,
mm-hmm.
but they weren't solid enough to hang our hats on. This has been a real learning experience.
Well, Curtis Slee will like it then. Let me extend the question just a bit more, and that is, if you were able to determine there was going to be an assassination, could you act to change the outcome of that event? I'm asking if you can change the future.
I don't know. Obviously, it's come up always, time and time again, but I still don't know, Art. I'm still not sure about that.
Well, then let's.
In terms of an individual, I am. If I tell you that you have, let's say, pancreatic cancer,
yes.
or that you're going to die in a plane crash, as far as remote viewing can see,
right.
very soon, then you, as an individual, can change that. But in terms of large events, we're not so sure.
And there's no problem with the continuum objecting strongly to your modifying events that are supposed to occur?
Whoa. That's a preconceived notion. Because if the event itself, if I'm remote viewing you and telling you not to do something, that could
right.
be part of that data ensemble. In other words, part of the trajectory that says that this is going to happen,
uh-huh.
and therefore you're not going to die, that kind of thing.
And so your intervention was part of the continuum?
Correct.
I've got it. Okay. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello.
Hello. This is Michael in Norfolk, Virginia, Ed.
Hi.
I want to first say that I think the most underestimated aspect of your talent is what you bring to geopolitical analysis in radio. And
it's a skill. The remote viewing is a skill. The gift of gab and the verbosity and loquaciousness is a talent.
Well, it's more than a talent. I mean, it's an important function that you are serving here, and I want to reference that to last night's guest. But in passing, while waiting to come on, you mentioned something that I just have to say, if Art will give me an extra minute here, I just have to comment on. You talked about the Latin American cartels and the fact that you would not attempt a remote view their location points. Those of us who are friends of Rush Limbaugh need to consider something here. The Drug Enforcement Agency has pointed out that many of the American drug kingpins that formerly were dealing with the Colombian cartels have switched to prescription drugs because it's more profitable and it's less risky. Now, let's say the general public does not know, for the same reason that Ed Dames would be fearful of taking these people on, the general public doesn't know the exact nature of the dangers that Mr. Limbaugh might be in at this time. So I would say reserve judgment. Now, back to the subject of tonight and last night's guest. I too understand that he may have been very creative in the first part of the program with his novel and so forth. But that doesn't take away from the fact that the bottom line of what he was trying to do is to propose a way of solving the biggest problems in the world today, problems like you've been talking about here tonight. We have to think about problem solving. We have to think about creative solutions. And what you said about exploding a nuclear weapon on the Korean Peninsula, and what you just said about how you might be able to or not prevent an assassination, the same principle would apply to both of those. If we use problem-solving approaches to these problems...
All right, well, hold it there, caller. So you too, you also, Ed, said that you had some comment on last night's guest. Go ahead.
Yeah, I do, but I think we, for a moment here, we can't be so cursory to suggest that simple problem-solving or even complex problem-solving, the way that we in the United States at least do it, or even the French who are the master politicians, or they used to be, are going to do anything about to affect the mindset of the DPRK, the Democratic People's Republic of Korea. Forget it. It's a pipe dream. It's Pollyanna-ish. They're not going to change. They're not going to accept being subservient to U.S. will or anything. That's not going to happen. So we have to be realistic as well as problem solvers. And with regard to Robert Miles last night, he wasn't fabricating. He's, you know, pretty simple guy telling it like it is. But I think when you hear what I have to say about that, it might change your mind about what his experience was.
I'm listening.
That was not an abduction. He didn't go anywhere. We've seen this time and time again as viewers. That was a spiritual experience. The key here is that energetic, I mean, when you remote view Robert Miles like I did, here's this glowing white sphere. He was actually in a catatonic state, and he was plugged in to something.
I will say this, Ed. Listening to Robert last night, even though he went straight over the cliff halfway through the night in some ways, I fully understood, and that's why I held off so much, that he believed, as fact, everything he was saying. He believed it, Ed. There was no question.
Oh, I totally agree. I got to hear a lot of that.
Yeah, it wasn't some little made-up thing, much as it may have sounded that way. Or even if it didn't happen, the man believed every word of it.
There's two types of abductions that I'm familiar with, and I'll be discussing this at great length in the upcoming colloquium next month. One is the type that Robert Miles underwent, and the other is the actual abduction that leaves evidence behind, like Travis Walton. That was a real physical, material abduction.
I'll say I had the witnesses right here on the radio.
Yeah, you ought to see what you ought to be a remote viewer and look at the rest of the story. That's even more fascinating.
Is it?
My word for, oh yes.
Really?
But Robert Miles, yeah, because there really were, and this time we're not talking about sentient machines or robots. We're talking about five extraterrestrial alien presences inside a particular place, wherever the heck he went, ended up, they were there, right there with him, and these were real alien presence, real material,
mm-hmm.
I won't say flesh and blood, but they were real aliens, as opposed to what Robert Miles confronted, which was his guardian angel.
Uh-huh.
What happened to Robert Miles was the answer to a prayer. It doesn't have to be a prayer the way you and I think of prayer. The idea of, gee, I wonder if there's more to life than just this.
Yes.
And the idea of being an adventurer. He got his prayer answered, but he was being played the way that these glowing white spheres play people. They come in, they plug into your head like a neurosurgeon would and tweak you to make you believe anything or see anything.
He said, when I confronted him with that, he said, yes, Art, I thought that maybe I considered whether I was being lied to, whether I was not getting the real facts. Hold on, Ed. We're at the bottom of the hour already. You may all recall he did say that. That was a consideration for him. My guest is Major Ed Dames, otherwise affectionately known among some of his peers as Dr. Doom. From the high desert, you're listening to Coast AM, rip through the nighttime.
Well, call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Network.
You're running in the night with Coast to Coast AM. Good morning, everybody. Stay right where you are. Ed Dames will be right back. Let's do this, shall we? Ed mentioned the coming economic collapse, and as you can imagine, Ed, I'm getting a lot of fast blasts with regard to that. They want more details. When you say economic collapse, how serious, how big, and what can people do to protect themselves?
It's global, ergo the term global economic collapse.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of protection, I'm not a financial advisor, so I'm in a growth industry. My business goes up, especially goes up in times of disaster, just like the alcohol business or gambling. You know, it's just one of those things. People want more. They need these tools. So, but I'm not a financial advisor.
And nevertheless, though,
I assume that buying gold is one way out. But if you buy gold, you know, and you have to go to the gas pump, how do you buy gas? What do you do to buy gas? So, there's some practical issues there, too.
You go to the bank with your gold, and the banks are closed. But, Ed, if you have a good idea of what precipitates the collapse, then by extension, you should perhaps have some ideas about how you'd protect yourself against the effects of it.
I can only speak of myself personally, what I would do. And I don't think I would like to say what that is on the air, that it might be viewed as not too patriotic.
All right.
It deals with the American dollar.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello.
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 Yeah, Art, nice to hear you again.
Thank you.
Okay, my comment is about the Chinese conspiracy to sabotage the economy in the United States.
Well, he talked about the weapon that he sees they have regarding the killing of wheat.
That's true. That will destroy the economy in the United States or sabotage it in a way. I want to elaborate on that quickly. I'm in the export and import. I deal with the Chinese, several Chinese companies on a daily basis. On the contrary, China rely heavily on the economy in the United States. Many Chinese workers going to work every day thanking the U.S. because without the U.S. they won't be employed. And if the Chinese will sabotage, Tiananmen Square gave up the leadership in China a wake-up call. they're changing a little bit policies within China itself. Talking to my counterparts from China, that question always comes up. What do you think about the economy? Where is it going? They tell me, look, you know, without the United States, we are zero. And now,
Let me interrupt, too.
You're talking about right now in China. And by the way, I speak the language fluently. I know the culture well.
He does speak fluent Chinese.
Okay, so you're talking about right now, and that's true. That's true. But right now, China is not yet its own market, but it will be its own market. China is not only the world's market, you know, soon and right now. It's going to be its own market. Boeing is outsourcing only to China. Boeing is starting to build airliners in China, licensing the Chinese to build aircraft. Soon the Chinese won't need Boeing to do that. They'll have the technology and the expertise to make their own airliners, and soon they'll be their own market. We're talking about, once again, a country that makes 50-year plans, not 10, not 20, 50. And right now, they're 30 years into a 50-year plan. So think about that. We're not talking about day-to-day.
Your answer is a good one, Ed. In other words, right now, yes, they economically are dependent on us to continue the growth process and fulfill this portion of the 50-year plan. At the point they no longer need us, then something else could become true, yes?
Step by step by step. Methodically and systematically, yes, they have burps of their own. But they really stick to these plans, Art. And they're very, very quiet, and you don't know what hits you until it's over.
The answer makes sense. First time caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello.
Hi, yes. Yeah, I'm a big fan of the show. I'm Shambi up here in Seattle. And I was wondering, I had a question about from a few years ago when I tuned in on a program where you had a Dr. Dames, Dr. Doom on the show. It was a, you were, he actually remote, it was right after a plane crash, and he actually, I think it was the spring of 2001, and you were talking about how you remote viewed a, inside a cockpit of an airplane, and someone was saying a prayer in Arabic, and I guess I was just curious as to whether or not, that was actually a remote view of the September 11th events.
No, you're talking about Egypt Air Flight 990. When it went down, I happened to do an Art Bell Coast to Coast show.
You did,
the day after, and I said that I personally remote viewed two remote viewing sessions, an hour each, and looked at what brought the plane down and said it was an altercation in the cabin. And Art, there was silence on the other end because the odds of something like that happening were slim to none. And I said, "What the voice recorder will be found, and the FAA will find that there was indeed an altercation on the part of not a passenger, but on the part of crew members."
I remember.
So it was nothing about a prayer.
Okay. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Good morning, Art. Major Dames. This is Larry from Mount Sterling, Illinois.
Hey there.
It's an honor to speak to you both. My question, back with the appearance of Hale-Bopp Comet, as I recall, Major, that Dames projected that some kind of pathogen would be released from the tail of the comet.
That's correct.
I wonder if that's still a viable projection and if there's any correlation between that pathogen and the pathogen he speaks of with the Chinese weapon.
Ed?
No correlation with the Chinese weapon. If I ever went back and could retract certain things I said, one would be that, not because I don't think it's true, but because it's just too off the wall. What I said specifically was that something detached from Hale-Bopp or near it entered the Earth's atmosphere, something hard, like a carbon piece of matter, and disintegrated in the Earth's atmosphere, but on that and embedded in it was a fungi, like Claviceps purpurea, a fungi that that came down over Africa and infected some of the grasses in Africa, and that infection has already spread to Latin America and is moving up through Texas now. But that's the kind of thing I think I should have kept, because that's what causes the baby to be thrown out with the bathwater, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay. Onward. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi. Hello?
Yes, hello?
Hello.
This is Jerry from Miami.
Yes, sir.
Listening to WIOD.
Of course.
I have a question. He was talking about it reaching the tilt of the globe being 17%. Well, which way would it be tilting? Which degrees? Also, and how would it affect the satellites?
Communication satellites and geopositioning systems would be no more. It wouldn't work anymore. And who would care anyway? What I said was 17 degrees, not 17%. And that's just nominal.
17%, yes.
Yes, 17 degrees.
And we don't know. We have not done the work.
But, I mean, which direction of the degrees, like if the globe is 360 degrees around, which direction would the globe tilt?
What does it matter?
Well, all right, qualify that or explain that. What does it matter? Because the effects will be 300-mile-an-hour winds in certain places, you said. And what else, Ed? I mean, what happens?
The loss of, in terms of biblical revelation, a third of the fishes in the sea, a third of the trees on land and plants, and a third of the people.
That's a lot. Yeah, I guess in a way, then, it doesn't matter.
No.
Except for two-thirds of the people that are left.
Well, eventually it'll matter. When you have to rebuild, of course it'll matter. So I'm not being curt purposely. I'm just saying that we'll worry about that then.
All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello.
Yes, this is Olin in Culver City, California.
Hi, Olin.
Hi there. Every time we hear about the sunken city of Atlantis off of the coast of Cuba, everybody wonders how the city sunk below 2,200 feet deep. The Atlantic Ocean floor is spreading apart at the center and is subducting under the east coast of the North and South American continents. Less than 100 years ago, there was a Caribbean pirate seaport that sunk underwater in a big earthquake. There is still a paved road that leads down into the water's edge and continues underwater to the wrecked seaport. So what do you think about this subduction scenario?
Well, subduction, we're talking inches a year at
yeah.
the most.
Yeah.
Inches a year. Here is an alleged city at 2,200 feet. Sitting on the ocean floor at 2,200 feet, that's not subduction. That's the Earth's axis tilting on its axis, and water not just inundating a city, but changing what the globe looks like, the landscape of the globe. Last time it happened.
There's no scientist that I know of that's able to explain a movement of that magnitude, and I've spoken with quite a number of them.
Oh, they don't want to. They don't want to talk about it.
Well,
because of its implications.
Well, yes. If it can happen once, it can. It may be that these are great cycles that continue to repeat themselves, and the part they don't talk about is when it might repeat again.
Nobody thinks it's going to happen on their watch because of the vast spans of time between these kinds of global catastrophes are so great.
Mm-hmm.
Not on our watch, right?
Well, Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello. Hello? Yes, sir.
Hi. Could you elaborate a little bit on I heard you talking about different dimensions in time.
Yeah.
I mean, I experienced some things about
a lot of these abductions, for instance, the gentleman that was our guest last night, Robert Miles.
Yes.
That particular kind of experience is orchestrated by for all intents and purposes, I mean, let's call it like it is, angels. If you listen to Thomas Aquinas, here's Thomas Aquinas' words in English. I quote, "An angel causing an imaginative vision sometimes enlightens the intellect, but at the same time so that it knows what these images signify, and then there is no deception. But sometimes by angelic operation, the awareness of things only appear in the imagination, but neither then is deception caused by an angel, but by the defect in the intellect to whom such things appear. Now, the church fathers, Aquinas, Augustine, and their ilk, really went into great depth. Well, these were natural historians as well as clergy. Went into great depth about these kinds of things and had experiences themselves and studied the experiences. So this is the kind of so-called abduction, this transcendental CE3 that a lot of times we see as remote viewers, where someone will report something, but when you go back and remote view the event, all you sketch and describe is a glowing white sphere hovering, sometimes two, by the way, hovering over a sleeping person or somebody sitting up in a catatonic state.
Mm-hmm.
Robert Miles believed what he was saying.
Oh, yes.
That was not an ET experience. It was a guardian angel reading his mind and manipulating it. The older man and the young child that he saw, that he was sitting next to, are symbolic for himself, like the riddle of the Sphinx, the three ages of man, the young child, the old man, and himself, that the angel would be there throughout his whole life. That was symbolic for that. That's why she called herself his friend.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned regrets with reference to work you'd done.
And by the way, the clocks on the panel, the clocks that he was talking about, there were three spinning, what appeared to be clocks.
Yes.
When he was sitting next to these two people,
yes.
They were spinning at different rates.
That's right.
One, it's the different ways we perceive time. Time accelerates as we get older. For the boy, time went slower. For the middle-aged man, time sped up. And for the older man, the needle was spinning like crazy.
You mentioned regrets, Ed. Do you regret having remote viewed Satan?
No, not at all. It's just an idea anyway. It's an idea. These are ideas. And whether or not, it's just information. And all that information can add or sometimes detract from quality of life or fulfillment.
Mm-hmm.
Just information.
One more. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello.
Hello, this is Tawasi in Eugene, Oregon.
Howdy.
Howdy. I wanted to ask Mr. Dames, I believe it was the 97 show, you were talking about the importance of growing food in completely isolated settings. Do you still see it being important in the future to have your strains of food and seeds?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. On Art's first show on Halloween 7 years ago, almost to the day, one of the things I said on that two-hour program was we are, because of the vicissitudes of weather, there's going to be no more seasons, and we're going to be forced to grow crops. We won't be able to grow crops like we used to. We're going to have to put them in environmentally controlled structures that will actually form the template for human habitats. So eventually we'll start migrating into them because the weather will change so drastically. Yes, I believe that. And we need pure strains. If we don't have pure strains of seeds, guess what? The genetically modified stuff out there, we all know our worst fears will come true.
Ed, we're at the end of the program. Very quickly, what would you like to promo? It's got to be done quickly.
Yeah, remoteviewing2003.com will get it for you.
In other words, go to that website, and whatever you've got coming up is on there, including Mind Dazzle. They can find out about that and
so
forth.
They can read your teachersmind.com or read your parentsmind.com. I would encourage all of the
Well, how
parents.
About read your childsmind.com?
No. We have to leave the kids alone.
But it might have more practical application.
No, leave the kids alone.
Leave the kids alone. Let the kids read their parents' mind, huh, and their teacher's mind.
Mm-hmm. The Z generation, that's my target.
Well, I could have appreciated all this a lot when I was in school, I'll tell you that, Ed. But, you know, reflecting on it right now, it seems like, well, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how it hits people. So what was the web address one more time?
Remoteviewing2003.com, or if you want to sign up for a colloquium, it's 1-866-607-8439.
Wait a minute. You got to do that again, and slowly people don't get numbers, and they go to, you know, write them down.
Okay,
what is it?
If you can't make it to the colloquium and you would like to order tapes.
1-800.
1-866.
866. Sorry about that. That's
1-607.
607.
8439.
1-800-259-4439.
In the last 7 years, I've said it at least twice. I'll say it again. Welcome back, Art.
You have said that a few times, haven't you?
You sound great, yeah.
Well, I feel great. Thank you, Ed, and good night.
Good night, Art.
All right, that's Major Ed Ames from the islands, folks. And as always, it has been a distinct pleasure to be here, and I really mean that. What a pleasure it's been to do the weekend program for you. I will indeed be back next weekend. We will do it again when who knows what kind of trouble we'll get into. It seems to follow me around. Until then, I wish you a fine week ahead, and George will continue the tradition of the program right on through the week. Have a great week, folks. Here's Crystal, as always, to escort us out. Good night from the high desert.
Midnight in the desert, shooting stars across the sky. This magical journey will take us on a ride. With the longing, searching for the truth. Will we make it to tomorrow? Will the sun shine on you? Midnight in the desert.